was created by the 2005 Legislative Assembly and is charged with analyzing all aspects of the Oregon Legislative Assembly and making recommendations on improvements that can be made. Senate President Peter Courtney and House Speaker Karen Minnis jointly appointed 30 Oregonians to serve on the commission, which is co-chaired by Gary Wilhelms and Judge Laura Pryor, who is with us on this committee. The commission held its first meeting in this building on September 6th. At that meeting, it was agreed that initially the commission would be divided into five committees: facilities, human resources, management, process, and public institutions. Each of those committees will meet this month to review proposals and suggestions that have come to the commission. The full commission will gather again on November 7th to hear committee reports and to decide how to proceed. The commission heard many thoughts and suggestions at our first meeting, but perhaps there were two that seemed to find an overwhelming consensus. One was a question put by former Supreme Court Justice Sue Leeson, who stated that the goal of this commission could best be summed up by asking the question, what should Oregonians want in a 21st century legislature? University of Oregon President Dave Frohmeyer also identified seven aspects or issue areas facing this commission. They were as follows: one, loss of public confidence in the process and in the legislature as an institution; two, subordination of the legislature's independent formulation and analysis of Oregon's public agenda to others, including the executive branch, the lobby, and the initiative industry; three, a perception by some that the legislative process has broken down because public policies and programs have become too large and complex for short-term, part-time legislators; four, political partisanship; five, the perceived effects of dependence on campaign contributions; six, the decline of the citizen legislature; and seven, adaptations to modern communications and technologies. As our name suggests, this committee's charge is to look at a wide swath of issues that touch upon the legislature as a public institution. This includes public relations, ethics, and the relationship between the branches. And we'll hear from several individuals today who will testify and provide us with their expertise. We'll hear from those experts a bit later, but first, I would invite a discussion now among committee members here to share any initial thoughts they might have. And I know, Judge Pryor, you've been attended a morning meeting of another committee this morning. Is that correct?
And just part of it.
Just part of it. And Commission Administrator Marjorie Taylor did as well. And perhaps you might share with us how those discussions went.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this morning, the first topic of discussion for the Management Committee and the Human Resources Committee was the same as yours. We talked about the seven Frohmeyer points and the Susan Leeson, what does the 21st century legislature look like in Oregon? And we had the 12 members there, and the discussion was really all across the board about some of the major issues that are going to come before the commission as a whole. And we didn't specifically center on the Frohmeyer 7 or Susan Leeson's comment, but instead, my impression of how the conversation was going is that perhaps the commission as a whole needs to refocus their efforts on some major issues first, and then go back to some of the smaller issues, such as some of the facilities issues or some of the staffing issues, because they will directly reflect what some of the responses and recommendations are from the commission on bigger issues, such as annual sessions. If you decide on annual sessions, then you have to develop a different staffing plan than you would for any other. Biennial sessions, keeping biennial sessions and beefing staff up maybe in legislative fiscal or in council or something like that. So we spent about an hour and a half just discussing that and encouraging the committees individually and the commission to focus on bigger issues first. And then for the rest of the meeting, we heard from all of the offices in the legislative branch, including the caucus offices, leadership offices, the desks, council, fiscal, revenue, and legislative administration, about staffing in their offices and some partisanship issues and how session proceeds with partisan staff, nonpartisan staff, and it was really kind of an interesting discussion.
Judge Pryor?
I was here just for the end of it.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to comment. I didn't really hear enough of it.
Well, it's been a month since we last met, I mean, 4 weeks from today, and I'm sure in the past 4 weeks, committee members, as I have heard from others with suggestions, just any reflections before we begin a discussion, Gretchen? Or
Well, I did reflect a bit on the seven Cronemeyer points that were trying to identify aspects of a problem statement, and I guess my take on that from considering also what were the what was the initial sort that put some specific smaller, large and small topics in our bailiwick. And I guess I can accept the first aspect of the problem, loss of public confidence. And the suggestion that Dick Cronemeyer had was that we look at the dimensions of that concern. I guess my personal view is the largest dimension of that concern is the public lacks confidence because of perception reality of limited traction on what are the priority issues for the state. So that, if I were to, we're going to use those seven as an organizing principle, I would like to kind of cut to the chase on that one if we could. And then some of the issues that came from others in that initial sort, you remember the goose liver pate one, but there's also one that talks particularly about the priorities of the state, but also public confidence and public relations and that kind of thing. I would like to think that the public doesn't just want to have us do all the 2 million things that would like us to do, but really get traction on the priority issues. If that is so, then again, looking at this subcommittee, and President Frommeyer picked out in his number four partisanship, I would like to reconceive of that as greater than partisanship. But again, that larger concern of what is it that gets in the way? What is it about the conflict? What is it about the relationship with the executive branch that prevents us from getting traction? And then the his going back to his number two, that is about subordination of the legislature's independent formulation and analysis of Oregon's public agenda to others, then we would have a way to say, well, how could the institution, the public institution of the legislature, what would be characterization of the roles, what would be the training for legislators, assistants, caucuses, lobbyists, so that the public voice is heard and issues of greatest priority or impact for the state are addressed. And again, I think you hear some ideas about that in the sort of different numbers 28 and numbers 13, 18, and 77, all those issues that are have been at least initially given to us. And then finally, as he called out as an aspect of the problem, number six, the decline of the citizen legislature, having kind of conceived that the most important thing is to address the greatest priorities of the state, then in this century, who is a citizen legislator, and how does she or he function? What's the accountability mechanisms? You know, then we might even have a notion about how often can a note go on the floor, or must we keep them on the floor? Mm-hmm. All those smaller things that also have been put in our box.
As I think said at the first meeting too, I think this committee and all the other committees have to balance between the idealistic and the realistic.
Yes.
And while it would be nice for this committee to recommend that, you know, every district elects a good legislator who works in a bipartisan fashion, it's not realistic. And people have freedom to elect the people they elect, and you can't, you know, this committee can't legislate human behavior in the legislature. So we have to keep that in mind as well. Representative Boone, your unique position here of serving in the legislature and working in the legislature, and now you get to be part of a panel that will advise how to change the legislature.
I know, it's a little disconcerting.
And I guess part of my, I've been looking at these too, and I guess part of my consensus on this is on things, take the notes on the floor, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty individual, because I have to say, I talked to the chief clerk's office and their pages and the sergeant at arms and said, I don't wish to have any notes passed to me on the floor during session. And I did the same for my committees, and that was because I don't get pulled out of committee or off the floor, unless it's an emergency. And I said, if it's an emergency, that's a family emergency or, you know, whatever, and it's not come out, I need to talk to you because, you know, you sound like you're wavering or something like that. Because you miss the comments, you miss the testimony, and you miss... I just did it early on without having... I did get a few notes that came through and just chose not to go out. And so I think it's a personal thing. I've seen people say, oh, gosh, you know, I have to go out now. And I'm thinking, no, you don't. Not if you don't want to. So that, I think I wouldn't want to try to, you know, pass judgment on that, because for some people maybe they need to talk to people for whatever reason.
No, it's just using that as an example.
It's a great example, though. It really is. It's just, that's the kind of thing I think we might want to keep as an individual. But I actually have been contacted by another member of the body asking to forward some ideas and things, and a lot of those are things that happen here in the building. And, you know, I think about it, I think, yeah, I thought that was kind of funny too, or maybe we shouldn't be doing that, you know, things like that. So they come up, and I'm glad to be here. I really am. It's kind of a two-edged sword, I guess. So, but I think it's a great thing that we're doing, and I'm happy to sit with you all on this committee.
Mr. Herring, you're right.
Well, it's really tough to react to things. But on the one hand, you would hope that there are all kinds of institutional things, fixes here and there, that could be carried out in order to make people love the legislature. But I think that's just an unrealistic expectation. I also doubt the premise on which we operate, and that is that the legislature now is much more unpopular than it's ever been. I don't know that for a fact. I don't know that that's wrong, but I suspect that's wrong. Because when you read the papers from the 1920s, from the 1930s, you think, my God, what were they doing? And when you look especially at the initiatives that were proposed in the early days of that process in the 19-teens and 20s, I mean, you got a whole bunch of proposals that have to do with taxes, with individual projects, courthouses being built or not built, bridges, that kind of stuff. And you think, why can't the legislature take care of this sort of stuff? Well, my point here is that, not to drag this on out, but I don't think that necessarily the legislature now is any more despised than it's ever been, or you know, denigrated than it's ever been. My guess, though, is that... to the extent that people dislike the legislature or think that it's not doing its job, they zero in on something particular that they don't like and don't really pay attention to the overall picture. And I have no particular proof of this, but that's just my impression. Every once in a while, we in the news business love to point out some really oddball things that are going on in the legislature. I mean, some years ago, we got a lot of traction. I mean, I'm talking 10, 20 years ago now, about on a bill that my favorite legislator proposed, that everybody had to have a firearm and know how to use it. Mm-hmm. And we got story after story about this. And it's obviously a cockamamie idea, but nevertheless, we just loved it. And we just played it up, and it's that sort of, on a wholly different plane. Not too long ago, the legislature passed a bill that had to do with crossing crosswalks. Mm. You couldn't drive past the crosswalk if it was anywhere, if there was a person anywhere in sight, practically, something like that. Now, anybody who knows anything would realize that that kind of thing is just impractical in traffic, especially in city traffic. You just can't pass a law like this. Well, again, this is a completely inconsequential law, but I can't. I mean, you know how much news space has been spent on this silly little thing about having to do with crossing the crosswalk. So, my point here is that the reason the legislature is in disrepute sometimes is because, first of all, it does some silly things like that crosswalk law, and secondly, because the silly things are much easier to report on, and they're much more fun to write about than grand and difficult issues like how much to spend for schools and what to do about the environment and whether or not the land use regulations ought to be fixed and so on. Because, frankly, I mean, the public's eyes just glaze over when you talk about those big things. So in the coverage, in the news coverage of the legislature, the little things take an inordinate amount of, or disproportionate mm-hmm. amount of space and time. And the sillier they are, the more attention they get, obviously. So what do you do about that? Well, I think a legislative leadership in a system that would squelch silly ideas before they get out or before they get a lot of play would do a lot, would make the legislation more boring, but it would also, I think, do away with some of this silliness that mm-hmm. people grasp onto when they want to complain about something. Mm-hmm. Now on the major issues,
or we could just recommend we abolish the free press.
I think Hassel makes a good point. Yeah. I mean, yeah. How do you get traction on the major issues?
Yeah. For the record, too, we're joined in the dais here by our fellow commissioner, Justice Hans Lindy. We're glad to have him here with us this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you.
So my recipe for trying to solve at least some of these problems is for the leadership, at least in the legislature, to be more serious about certain things and to institute those kinds of reforms that allow it to say, look, we're not going to spend any time on this. Forget it. We're here for important stuff and so on. Something else that occurs to me that I have felt myself, and that is that people really don't know. I mean, they're intuitively unhappy with what goes on in Salem, but most of them really have no idea what goes on in Salem. They just figure it's going on, so it's got to be bad.
It's the same thing with Congress. I find people, they love their congressman, but they don't like the institution. And I'm sure people tell them they love Debbie, but they don't like that dang legislature. It's everyone else. It's all the other people's fault.
And so I'm thinking that maybe there. I mean, idealistically, you would hope, and I hope that if people had a better or an easier way to find out really what is going on or what is going on, they would be less likely to be unhappy about it. On the other hand, I could be wrong. Maybe the more they know, the worse it gets. I have myself tried to find out, for example, about work that goes on in the committee without actually being here, and it's very difficult. I mean, you can call people up, mm-hmm. maybe you get a call back and so on. And that kind of stuff normally is not this readily available online. As a quick fix, I would think amplifying the system of putting stuff online and in a more timely way, especially votes, especially individual committee votes, would let people know who are really interested before they go off, period. they would get a chance to find out. Those are my thoughts sort of off the top of my head.
Chunky, can I hear?
Well, I don't know if I belong here or not. I think my point is to really try to look at it from a business point. Many areas, we can have a fancy office, a fancy vehicle, whatever we can have. So who is driving it? My company is, look at a private company. We're training people for 3 months. Even if that guy have an MBA, I don't care. They go through 3 months training. And still, we're going to fire them. Some of the part-time to time, I got to wear the tip off. Who in the heck can make that decision? Who is it? I want an individual name, and then find out it's fine. What I just say is we can add in so much stuff. I read that real quickly earlier. So many issues we've got to cover there, but when it comes down to business, there's the people. People is everything we have. I don't care what the IT department, where IT, so many people, computer system. Then they say buy another $2 million computer system. I have no idea why they pay that much money. We just bought that $3 million system 6 years ago. Now it's no good anymore. They want to put it again. But come down to the people. Now, when it comes to people, we all recognize it. Many years ago, we made a big mistake. Sounds pretty good. But now we lost a lot of professional lawmakers. I don't call the politicians. Those guys, I rather use lawmakers. I trust a lawyer than a judge more better. So a politician doesn't. But, you know, the lawmakers, now proficient people are gone. And I remember 1975 moving to Oregon. People told me Oregon is the best state. Mm-hmm. Man, the right, left, they hate each other. But they go drinking beer, they come back and they make a decision based on what's good for the state. Wow. That's what the Oregon image was when I moved in from Seattle. And of course, it's going different direction, far right, far left, and just people forget about our middle people like us. Then, what am I suggesting? I would really like a focusing as a businessman, one issue, people. Now, do we have a mechanism of training those amateur lawmaker coming? They want to be here. I know many lawmakers, they want to be here. They're coming in. I want to show you what I can do for those guys. And then they all fail. They mix up a bunch of, you know, mess up in the pond. Now, do we have a really mechanic of a training? Yes, I heard that they do have a training, which is on, I said, on the surface only. One of our lawmakers, after he elected, he told me, Junki, man, I was so stupid. I said, I thought I know everything. And then they gave me the tax form all the way to 4 feet high. Junki, I can't even read it next 4 years. But I got to act like I know what I'm talking about. So I rely on those lobbyists or somebody know what it is I'm taking. And it was a really true, his regret is, Junki, I really have to study, but we don't have a time. Mm-hmm. I got elected, now here, boom, January, now you got to act like a professional. Well, so, and then come down to training those amateur lawmakers, become very professional training program. To do that, maybe session had to delay. Now instead of January stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, those mechanical stuff is possible can be done, you know, 2 months delay, not going to affect our life here, but we can train people. Also, time to time, I experienced that elected officer staff who was not elected by voters making very negative statement publicly to other elected officer named directly. That was really tipping me off every time I heard that. Mm-hmm. That person have no right to power attack another elected officer. And then no one punished them. Well, I heard that there is some kind of penalty, you know, something and stuff. But, you know, again, same time, we got a training creating professional staff. So every time people elect this, somehow they got a job somewhere because they help your campaign, whatever it is. Or I know that the system works that way. But are they really professional? Another area that I was really kind of surprised that research development policy stuff. There was I didn't know that so many, every organization have their own research development organization. And then who's running? I heard they are not really professional people running it. They're just lawmakers, the staff, or the nice guy friend, they're just running that stuff. And certain the research development policy issues are something like Attorney General office, one central there. And then just any officer, any lawmaker can ask, hey, this is the issue I'm concerned about. Tell me exactly what's going on here. So they give out the very, very high levels of advice instead of a personal feeling or, you know, oh, I got to protect those guys stuff. I think then I found out they used to have a policy research development, have one department in the state Oregon, but they disappeared because of the budget. Then we found out budget didn't disappear. Budget spread among the 6 organizations, which is a lot of money went out. And again, those stuff, I like to concentrate more instead of just spread the shotgun. And more likely, 99% of people are not going to listen unless we're going to focus on certain things. Again, training professional lawmaker, training professional staff, it's a long run, that's much cheaper. And then also, same thing, there's unwritten rule that's stated many, many, many years. So many stuff I even don't know. But those traditional unwritten rule was forgotten by those amateur lawmakers. Mm-hmm. You know, I do really believe that years ago that, hey, we hate each other, we'll go after work and go drink in a bar and drinking beer, and the next day we make a right decision. I love that statement. I don't hear that anymore. Each lawmaker really doesn't talk to each other. Really doesn't. I remember years ago they did talk somehow behind the scene. And they, now they're just pretty isolated. Of course, floors are different. Ceilings are different. And obviously you know who belong to. But once people got elected, they belong to us. Our people, they are my payroll. Don't tell me that, who you belong to. It's like in Japan happened, the biggest huge issue happened, Koizumi won, big margin of it. And he didn't get what he wants, so he just, the election started over again. So he fired everybody, all protections gone. It's a kind of scary. I hope that another area, if I go a little bit farther more, I know this is almost impossible, how powerful caucus is. I know that's even the money issue. You cannot cut off money in the politics. But sometimes caucus tell the old politician how they vote. And that's a reality. If you don't, they're going to support you next time. But what happened in Japan, same right now. It's a very dangerous time right now. They control the 2/3 by Koizumi Minister. They can pass anything they wanted. Caucus make a decision. Who's going to run next election? Who's going to be next, senator? So now that one's a little bit too far, but you know it's powerful caucus. We should, I'd like to say, more committee have more power, certain way, and to do that, well, result that I think we should more listen to minority people, minority politicians, lawmakers' opinion. I know this is the American way. If one vote more, you become president of this country, you become world leaders. One vote more. I know that the game is. But at the same time, there's another people who are minority people looking for something. But I see time to become more aggressively last 7-8 years. Minority controlled everything. You know, majority controlled everything. So that's how can I do that? How can I make those majority people can listen, giving a chance to minority people's opinion of it. At least listen to those guys. It all comes down to people. Mm-hmm. How do we respect other people? They are elected to come down here. Almost like a basic stuff. People, people, people. And that's something we could do. Something we can spend another $500 million on a computer system. But we can train in people, mm-hmm. educate them. Mm-hmm. So that's my point. Right.
Judge Lundy, any opening thoughts? I'll wait till.
I'm not a member of the committee.
Okay.
I have something to tell you about later, but you do it first.
Okay. Well, I thought what we might do is take a look at the issues that have been assigned to this committee, which are, I think everyone has in front of them. Page 10, I believe, on the.
Karen, before you go,
yes.
Can I make a couple of
please
comments?
Do.
Just a couple thoughts.
Yes, please.
On the big issue, it always strikes me that I'm not sure if we're really looking at Oregon the way it really is. Mm. I'm not sure that we're really seeing it the way it really is. When you think about the state of Oregon, we really need to think about how is it really constructed, and as it's laid out across this landmass, is there something in that that's always going to be causing us some kind of difficulty? And part of that is that you've got such a concentration of population in one part of the state, mm-hmm. and as Junkie says, if you have one man, one vote, then you're always going to have a minority. Somebody's always going to be a loser in that. So, in just the way the population is laid out across the state, it causes problems. It causes problems for the legislature and for two levels of local government and for state agencies. Because how do you deal with communities that go from 500,000 down to 700? Mm-hmm. But that is how this state is, and we need to see that and take that into consideration. Another thing that I think that it had been striking me when I'm looking at all this stuff and been reading it is there's a big disconnect between the levels of government. This legislative body, if you sit up here and you make, you make statute, then the agencies go out and develop some kind of administrative rule. Then you've got other levels of government that implement, but they're not in this process. I'm one of those levels, and the only way I get to do that is to sit right there. And I have to register as a lobbyist, but I'm an elected official. I'm an elected official just like Debbie is. But in order to talk to her, I have to do that, and I have to try to get to her in however many hours or days out of every 2 years. And yet, at those levels of government, we're supposed to implement things. So there's a big disconnect in the state of Oregon between the levels of government. There isn't any way for us to come together and talk about the nuts and bolts, and not about whether you want the program, you don't want the program, but Measure 5 was a good example of a major change in a major system in Oregon, and there wasn't any way for the implementing level of government to really talk to the legislative level of government about that. We got a committee and hope to God in 5 or 6 weeks we could redo the whole assessment and taxation program in the state of Oregon. So what we've gotten is a broken system that we're still trying to implement at the local level. So there's a disconnect between the levels of government. We're going to see it again in Measure 37. Then the other thing that I think is there's another disconnect between the major systems. Our society runs on systems, whether it's a government system, a transportation system, a medical system, a judicial system, whatever. They're big, major systems that run society in Oregon, and there's a huge disconnect between those systems. We act as though they don't interconnect, that one doesn't have a bearing on another one. So when we're talking about the public institution, I hope we do take the big look at the state of Oregon and say to ourselves, what is it we're seeing? What is it? What do we really have? Because we're so used to compartmentalizing all this stuff that we're missing the benefits that we might be able to get if we begin to try to see things as they actually connect. So, thanks, Gary. I just wanted to get those comments out.
And I think, unless there's any objections, before we go on further discussion, we do have some demonstrations and a witness here, and I think it might be helpful if we hear from them first. And I think first we'll have the we're jumping around a bit, Dave. We're ahead of schedule. But first I think we'll go to the... Are you going to do the website?
Yes, we are.
Well, come on up. And Dave Henderson, who is head of legislative administration, and Daniel Russell from his office are here to lead us through the web.
Chair Tim Chuck, members of the committee. I'm Dave Henderson, legislative administrator. Thank you for having us here today. And we have a number of sources of information available to the public through legislative administration. We coordinate for several of the offices in the Capitol. And probably our most visible tool is the website.
For all the commission members, Dave, some who might not be familiar with legislative administration, your job is basically...
There are four statutory agencies that provide support to the Legislative Assembly. Legislative Council does all of the bill drafting and works and compiles the ORS. Legislative Fiscal does all of the budget work. Legislative Revenue does all of the tax and school finance work. Legislative Administration provides all the administrative support for those offices as well as all of the other assembly offices. So we're kind of the behind-the-scenes people who are supporting the process, whether it be maintaining the website, running the human resources functions, budgeting functions, staffing committees, running all of the computer systems throughout the Capitol. So we do a little bit of everything.
And nonpartisan, bipartisan?
Nonpartisan. We work with the Senate and the House, Democrats and Republicans, members of the public. We're here to serve everyone. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Daniel Russell, who is our web editor, and he's going to take you on a brief tour through our website. And I think what this will do is help give some context to a lot of the other things that we do, and then we can go through and talk a little bit about the rest of the information sources.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Daniel Russell, and my title is web editor. I work in the Legislative Administration Office, and I'm responsible for maintaining the website. I post press releases and maintain member pages. So what I'll do today is I'm going to take you on kind of a flyover of the what's available on the website, and then later on we'll go in and we'll look at a little bit more detail on a couple of items. But just as a little bit of background, on our page, on our website, we host more than 57,000 pages of information. And as an example, last April during a typical session month, we had 1.8 million hits on our site. So it is a very visible and very upfront place for people to interact with the legislative process.
Do you guys send out press releases to newspapers that list the website, or how does the public find the website? So
we promote the website in some press releases, and the legislators themselves do a lot of the promotion.
Mm-hmm. And does each legislator have an individual website?
Yes, Mr. Chair, each legislator does. And at some point in this presentation,
Daniel
will show you.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Thank you. We work to make this as navigable as possible. We use cross-navigation. And basically what that means is that from pretty much anywhere on the site, you can get to pretty much anywhere else on the site without having to backtrack to find a menu. They're pretty much right there. What you'll see is we've got what we call a primary navigation bar at the top and then a secondary navigation bar down the site. So what I'll do is I'll just walk you through both of these, and we'll start at the first one. We've got a home link. This takes us back to this main page from wherever you are, so you can always get back to ground zero very easily. The second two is we have the Senate and the House links, and these are modeled to contain pretty much the same information. On the Senate side, for example, we've got senator information. If I click in here, we have all this information is sorted in various ways. And with like three clicks, someone has got contact information for all of the senators, or under the House link, they can have contact information for all of the representatives. Also on these two pages is the websites or the web pages for leadership, as well as the Secretary of the Senate. And under the House, we've got the Chief Clerk's page as well. When someone wants to contact members, they can print out mailing labels that are ready to go from the Senate and the House links as well. Moving on to bills and laws. Under bills and laws, what we host on our page is we've got every piece of legislation all the way back to 1995, along with history. Yes, sir.
You might want to interrupt for a second. When you say you can contact your legislator, I answer maybe 50 calls a week from people say, who's my legislator? if you lived in Sweet Home, for example, and you didn't know who your legislator was, how would you find them?
I am looking forward to showing you exactly how to do that.
You got all the answer, though.
On the secondary navigation bar, we have a link called
Find Your Legislator.
And it will address that.
Go keep going. Debbie, from experience, how many emails did you get during session? Are people using this and finding you?
It's hard to tell sometimes that they came through there, but every day, it depends. During session, anywhere on a slow day, 50 maybe emails. And interim now, it's a lot slower. Maybe I'll get 5 or 6 a day, depending on what's happening in the news.
Mm-hmm. And do you have the staffing ability to answer all the emails? I mean, U.S. Senate, we don't. I mean,
right.
They get about tens, thousands of emails. You can't answer them all.
I do my own email. Okay. A lot of members have staff people do it, and they access it. You can access it from anywhere in the world. So it's a very easy contact way to contact. And that is exactly right. When someone asks me, sometimes I'll get that netherland on my district where we're not sure exactly where the line is, so several of us will answer the same constituent. And, you know, you can also find out exactly by address, you know, and find that link. And I often give people this, or I give them Oregon.gov, that site that's also listed as a link here, for access to state agency information. But it's been, for me, and I hear both sides of this, but for me, this thing really is helpful. This is very helpful. It's got everything you need on it, in my opinion.
Beck, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Continuing with bills and laws, as I said, we have all of the legislation back to 1995 through all the special sessions with both the text of the measures as well as the major history. Also under bills and laws, we've got the Oregon Revised Statutes. We have the most current version. We have all of it, and we also include with that an index by subject that is searchable. So if someone just has an idea of what they're trying to find, they can find it by searching the index, and that will take them to an ORS reference, or they can find the ORS reference. We have Oregon laws from 2001 and until 2003, and soon, of course, we'll have the 2005. Next, on the committee's page, you can see there's a lot of information here. I'm going to highlight about three items. First, we've got committee assignment information. This allows someone to find out who is on a committee by member or who's on a committee by committee. So you can come at it from either way. Also on the committee's page, we've got a link to the committee agendas online. This is a tool I'm going to show you a little bit more about in a few minutes that allows someone to get very current information about what meetings have been scheduled in the building. Also, sometimes people are coming to the Capitol. They're hoping to testify before a committee, and they don't know how. So we have a little tutorial on how to testify before a committee, and it just outlines the do's and don'ts, things that people need to know. Under the budget and tax link, this provides a little bit of background on what the Legislative Fiscal Office is and what they do, as well as the Legislative Revenue Office. Of course, links to those individual pages, which has all the resources that those offices provide. Next, we have an audio video link. This is a fantastic resource. For example, here under Live Today, we have one channel of video that is streaming all the time. In fact, the meeting that we're in right now is being streamed, and there are people watching us. And there's a schedule down here of what meetings will be broadcast on this channel. On the audio Live Today, unlike the video, every legislative meeting that is happening in the building at any given moment is being streamed live. So somebody doesn't have to wait for a replay. It's happening now. In fact, my mom in Brookings, Oregon, is listening to this on her connection.
Hi, Mom.
So this is a real thing, and people in the far corners of Oregon can access the legislative process from here.
And can your mom see you as well?
I think she's just streaming the audio.
Okay, all right.
But she could have opted for the video.
You too.
As soon as a meeting is over, the audio is archived into the audio archives. And we go from the current interim, last session, all the way back to the 1999 session. So, for example, in the 2005 session, we have all of the Senate chamber sessions, all of the House chamber sessions in their entirety, and all of the committee meetings in their entirety. Someone can listen to as much of the legislative process as they want to hear. Next, we have an employment link. This just makes available the recruitments that we have open. We've got related sites. Oftentimes, someone comes to the legislative site and they're looking for something else. This is where they can find it. We've got a frequently asked questions page. It just gives background on what's available on our page and answers some frequently asked questions. Next, we have capital information. This page is designed to do two things. First, it provides information about the capital, and like historical information and information about the building. It also provides information about how to access the building and how to use the building. So right at the top, we've got building hours, when someone can come visit the building. Next, we have phoning the Capitol. Not everybody's in Salem. Not everybody can make a local call. It's not a local call for them. So we've got an 800 number, so someone can get in that way. Next, we have a Capitol Activities calendar. The calendar lists not just legislative events. Most of the places list just legislative meetings. This lists everything that's scheduled to happen in the building. So, for example, if there's a fire safety rally or something scheduled for the front steps, someone can find it here. Next, we have a link to our kids page, and our kids page includes information about Oregon, games, resources for kids, and we've got a teacher's handbook designed to help teachers teach about the process. The next one is the Capital Activity Planning Guide. This is help someone access and actually use the building. So when someone wants to have a business meeting or, let's say, a political rally at the Capitol, this walks them through the process. This gives them the background information they need, what the basic rules are, who to call in order to make that happen. Next, we have an outline of what the ADA resources are available in the building if someone has questions. We have a directory of staff offices and Capitol offices. In here, someone will find the office names, they'll find the location and a phone number so they can contact whoever they need to here in the building. Immediately after that, if they are coming to the building with an office number, we've got basic floor plans for the building so someone knows how to get to where this room number is. We have an online gift shop that corresponds with our gift shop that's out next to the kiosk. And we also have online tours for folks that can't come to the building for an actual physical walk around the building tour. And finally, on this Capitol information page, we've got directions in text form and map form to get to the building. A lot of people haven't been here before. And we have information about parking around the building once they do get here. That's an outline.
Just prior.
How long has it taken you to get this to this point? Just guess.
Just guess.
Just rough.
I have been in this position for about a year, and I'm wondering if we have someone who can better answer that.
We're looking for help.
I'm Bill Sweeney, Legislative Administration Information Systems and Publications Coordinator, Chair, members of the board.
I should point out that Daniel's the front man for the website, but there are a couple of people who behind the scenes do the nuts and bolts work. Bill Sweeney is one of them and Yvonne Badger is the other. So it's a good team of three people providing this service.
And the website has been going, I believe, since 1995 in some form or another. Started with a Gopher site providing information. And as Dave and Daniel have said, we're part of a team that work on this along with stakeholders here in the building. And we've been striving for years to kind of bring it up to this level. But it's been going on now since, in some form or another, since about 1995.
Follow up.
Yes.
How much time do you have to put into it, say, in a week?
Updating Daniel handles the updates, just the day-to-day things. I'm involved with the architecture, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Commissioner, during the session time, I am virtually full-time, just maintaining the website. I post press releases. I make changes to member pages. I update information pretty much continuously. Some of my other tasks include I answer phone calls and some general things from the public. But most of my time during session is dedicated to just keeping this going. During the interim, this is actually my first interim in this position, and it still requires a great deal of time, but it is a little bit less.
Okay, so most of a five-day week would be you'd be doing this?
Particularly during session, yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
It's very impressive, and Dave, knowing you as I do, I assume that you also check websites of other legislatures and compare and contrast and get ideas and...
Mr. Chair, as a matter of fact, our team does do that and to try to keep track of what other states are doing. And we think that we've got one of the more effective sites out there.
Representative Boone?
It's true. And, you know, I don't see Daniel that much, but he is there for me. And I'm one of 90 just the members. And it's our job to let him know what we need updated on our sites. But... it's almost instantaneous, I have to say. And, I mean, it's same-day service. It's you update your site as you will. Some people have staff people do it. I do mine. And especially during session, we're busy doing things if we want something posted right away. And it's important because in our area, and I know you have nothing to do with this, you guys, but I'm still in a dial-up mode, and the streaming is hard to get, and so people do rely on our personal websites, I think, and the sites that are the links here. And I have to say, in my office, and there were only two of us, I have one staff person during session and one divided into two people during the interim so that they can be in two different places, and we use it daily. I know I do. When I need information, I go there on bills, whatever, and it's, I can see if I had at home a faster link to this, I could listen to the committees too. Mine just ends up stopping and reloading or whatever that is. But I hear about it. People are very happy in my district because we're at least 2 hours away, and when there's a hearing going on and they just can't make it, they can put it on their computer, even at work, if they need to keep up with what we're doing and to hear it right away. And I can't tell you, I don't think there was one instance where we called someone who was following a bill that we made it by phone faster than they had it, because they were paying attention and they got it. So they do a fabulous job. They're all 12 years old, but, you know. That's why we have kids.
Impressive beard for a 12-year-old there. And also, yeah.
So. And drinking coffee.
Go ahead, Becky. I think we're going to get to the find your legislator mode for Hasso here. So
very close to that. Mr. Chair, we're now going to take a walk down the secondary navigation bar. And the secondary navigation bar starts with our search engine. And we'll just take a real brief look at that at this point, but we will come back to it. Our search engine is designed to search through the Oregon Revised Statutes and the 2005 legislative measures, but all the way back to 1995 is basically the bills and laws that we have on our site are searchable with this search engine. During a typical session month, we'll have, I think, 56,000 hits on our search engine alone. Next, we have the Citizen's Guide. The Citizen's Guide is designed to walk someone through a deeper understanding of the legislative process and how to participate. So what someone finds here is more information about what's available on our site and more information about how to contact their legislators and more information, for example, like lobbying in Oregon. Down here we have a link to an explanation of the laws of lobbying in Oregon. A lot of folks come into the building, they don't know this, and this helps give them an opportunity to get some background before they come through the doors. We also have a video version of the how to testify before the committee, and once again, the same sort of resource. Next, we have our kids page. This links to the same kids page that was on our capital information, just another way to get there. And finally, we have Find Your Legislator. And on this tool, basically, one is prompted for your address. And here it is. We are now being prompted for our address. And this will return, and I'm going to actually come back and demonstrate this in a couple of moments, but you'll be prompted for your address. You enter a physical address, and it's based on post office records as far as the maps of the nation. And it will return not only state and state senator and representative, it will also return federal representation.
I was hoping you had like electronic bracelets on all legislators, and if you could find your legislator, you could just pinpoint him. Here's Debbie right here. So.
She's shopping again.
A close cousin of the Find Your Legislator tool is the Write Your Legislator tool. Basically, it's the same idea, only it allows someone to send an email message to either their state senator, their state representative, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have the committee schedule, and I mentioned that I'd show you this in a couple of minutes. Here it is. This is a legislative committee agendas online, and this lists all of the meetings that are legislative, and it posts their agendas. This was last updated today at 1 p.m. So this is quite current information. Here on the left-hand side, we've got commissions, and it lives.
Here we are.
And here we are. We're down here towards the bottom, and there's our agenda and everything. So anybody who has access to the Internet can access this information. Next, we've got just a schedule for executive appointments. It's just lists what's happening. We also have a press releases page. This is available to all legislators and leadership offices. This is a great kind of a clearinghouse, a central spot where a member of the public can come and get the most recent news or press releases from the Capitol. And I've noticed on other legislative sites, this is unique. It's uncommon outside of our site. Next, we have the pages for the Legislative Administration Office, Legislative Council, Legislative Fiscal, and legislative revenue. I'm just kind of blowing through those and include information that are resources and from those offices as well as resources that they offer. Finally, we've got a site index, and this helps someone who is unfamiliar with their website. They can find what they're looking for by looking for a particular subject area, and we've got things listed up here in general subject areas, but they can look more specifically alphabetically. And, of course, we also have a link down here to Oregon.gov, kind of front and center, because that's another great resource. Now, that's a big overview of great. What we offer on our website. If you're interested, I can offer you a couple little scenarios about mm-hmm. how this might actually function in real life.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Let's say scenario one, I just moved to Oregon. Mm-hmm. I came here from Colorado, and I moved to Monmouth, and I'm happy to be here. But I know nothing about the legislative process mm-hmm. in Oregon. So I, with a quick web search, I'm able to find the legislative website, and I come here. And the first thing I see is I read this information here. It gives me a real over-the-top background on what the legislature is in Oregon.
I see Spanish down. Learn yeah. more. Is there, you did address it, is, can this be accessed totally in Spanish? Or?
It is not okay. all entirely available right. in Spanish. What we have is, if I click the Learn More, it takes me to a document, How an Idea Becomes Law. It outlines the legislative process, and this document is also available in Spanish.
Right. Okay, all right.
Which is available here.
Yeah. Okay.
So I come to the end of understanding the legislative process, and I realize how important it is to know who my representative and my senator is. So I another quick perusal, and I see Find Your Legislator. So I come here. And I enter my brand new address in Monmouth. Let's see if I can remember it. That's not what it is.
And I have to say this to clarify, I can tell how if I get emails, it says from internet, whatever. But and I think about half of ours come through this site.
So I just enter my physical address and submit that. And what the system returns is first my my federal senators and representative, and I also have my state senator and my state representative, which is Senator Winters and Representative Berger. From here, you can see we've got location, phone number, fax, website, as well as email. So there's a lot of different ways to contact members and to learn about them. But now let's take a look at a legislative website. So we'll take a look at my representative, Representative Berger. And there's a couple of common elements you'll find on all 90 of these pages.
And do you do these as well, or do they do them?
I maintain most all, actually. All
design them, write them?
They have a basic format that we follow, but I'll actually show you another example that there's quite a lot of freedom to adjust them. But there are some common elements we try to maintain. For example, we like to have a picture, we like to, and we'll have the name as party affiliation and the primary city of representation. And then, of course, the members can choose to have a welcome text, and Representative Berger has chosen to include this. And at the bottom, there's going to be another set of contact information. So wherever somebody turns, they're going to find information about how to contact their members. There's some certain items that each of these pages will have. They'll all have a biography page. They'll all have a link to the list of committees that the member is part of. They'll have a news page. This is where someone can post their own press releases to inside their office. They'll have email and district map picture. Representative Berger has chosen to include a weekly newsletter, and she's had a separate link for that, as well as a page that includes some links to constituent resources, things that she thinks are valuable to people in her district. And just as an example, I'll take you to a different member page. Let's look at Representative Smith's page, Patty Smith. And her page, as you see, looks different, but it has the same elements. Once again, we have the name, party affiliation, primary city that she represents. And she has the same links. They're just formatted. So there's quite a lot of freedom for the members to customize what they want their pages to look like. So back to the scenario. I now know who represents me, and I am now ready to engage in the process. So let's say maybe 3 weeks down the road, I'm reading the newspaper, and I come across this fascinating article about cattle. And this article is specifically relating to House Bill 2656. Knowing that I found my information at the website for the legislature, I come back here. And let's say if I did not have the major number, I could go to the search engine and I could enter cattle. It's just my general search term. And the search engine is going to bring back information on our website about this. In fact, the very first link links me to the text of House Bill 2656, which is the one I'm looking for. But I come here knowing that I've got the bill number. So I go to Bills and Laws, and I know it's a recent bill, so I can go to the 2005 regular session. And here there's a couple of different ways to access the information. I can follow the full text links and just basically narrow down following the numbers for the bill number. But I can also use search for a specific major number, which is here, and this is House Bill, so I select the type of bill, 2656, and this brings me to, this is a great resource. We've got basically the major history for this bill, everything that happened all the way through the legislative process, which committees heard it and what the votes were. Down here, we can extrapolate what all of those votes were. It passed in the House with 58 ayes, and here it lists the noes and who is absent so that you can extrapolate what the votes were for each member. Also, every version of the bill is available up here. We've got the enrolled version, so you can read the actual text of the bill itself. So now I have been able to get the information. I know who my members are. I can look at bills and find out the history, see who heard it, and who the sponsors were. And so we've got this information. So
great.
Do you have any questions about the legislative website that I can answer?
Wow. It's very impressive. Hassel, you'll have no problem answering people's questions now. Just direct them to the website.
Well, I do that, except that many of the people who call because they don't know their way around. And so then it doesn't really help them, because most of them would be totally confused. There's so much in there. And I have to admit myself that some of those, I've used the site almost every day, and several parts of it that I've never been to. And they're very confused. One of them is Florida Legislative.
Dave, do you have further testimony thoughts on the public interaction with the legislature besides the internet?
I've got a few other items that are in the memo that was distributed to you today that if you'd like, we can go through those.
Sure.
at a high level. It's looks like that, which hopefully you have at your place. Mm-hmm. I apologize to you. Through no fault of your commission staff, these were late getting to you. That was the fault of your person testifying in delaying and getting it to her. So in the future, we'll hopefully have that to her in time to get it to you prior to the meeting. As we said, that was a...
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you.
So. Thank you.
Of the website and the resources that are available there, we have a number of other ways that we make information available to the public. We go from high tech to virtually old low tech methods. There's a stack of publications on the chair here that you're free to go and look through. It's not all of the publications that we produce, but it is most of the publications. For the most part, they're available in our publications and distribution office down in room 49. Others, such as the ORS, are available through Legislative Council. Those publications, and there's a whole list of them in the memo of the publications that are available for the public. They are mostly free of charge. The ORSs, there's a charge for those. There's a small charge for the legislative guide, but the quick cards and every member of the public is welcome to come in and pick up a copy of a bill at no charge. So those are all available. We have a fairly extensive television presence that we hope will grow even larger in the near future. Bill Gross, who is our media supervisor, is here. I can touch briefly on what we do for television, and if you have some more in-depth questions, I know he'd be happy to come up and address those. We have cameras in each of the hearing rooms in the Capitol and in the House and Senate chambers. Those are operated out of the control room, which is in the basement of the Capitol, and every legislative hearing is carried by video onto the closed circuit system. So anyone in the Capitol or on the Capitol Mall who has access to the DAS network outside the Capitol has access to every hearing room at any given time. So they can be sitting in their office in the public service building and observe this hearing and then switch over to a hearing that's going on down the hall. And during a legislative session, they can tune in on floor sessions in the House and Senate as well as news conferences, either down in the press room or in the governor's ceremonial office. In addition to the internal closed circuit coverage, we put this signal out. We only have one signal that we can put out for video, but we make that available 24/7 on what we call Channel 1, and that signal goes out to it's distributed to some cable outlets. Not as many pick it up as we would hope, but some do pick it up, and we do also have a partnership with the Oregon Public Affairs Network, which picks up 2 hours of broadcast every evening. Sometimes they'll run our feed, sometimes they'll have feeds from other sources. But we do have that partnership with OPAN, which total distribution is about 400,000 households. So we do have, we're reaching into households mostly throughout the Willamette Valley and the Portland area. We have not been able to access outlying areas of the state so far, but we have conducted a project to look at our video distribution. We are in conversations right now with some potential partners that we hope at some point we'll be able to get a video signal out to somewhere in the vicinity of 90 to 95% of the population of the state. But it is an ongoing project. That's the status of it right now. For people who are able to come to the Capitol and want to track measures or access any of the information on the website, we have a public access PC in the publications office downstairs, and we have four PCs in the legislative library on the third floor. So people can come in and use those computers to access information. We have a toll-free information line, which is available throughout the biennium. We used to run it only during session, but we now have it live throughout the biennium. Anyone from around the state can call in and get information from that. What we have found is that prior to the aggressive nature of information available on the website, we employed two people full-time to answer that line during a legislative session, and they were busy full-time doing that. Now the number of calls have dropped off to the point where the office manager receptionist in one office can handle those calls, because we think that so many of the people are going to the website for information rather than calling the toll-free line. That is also a way for members of the public to access their legislators. We don't put live calls through because of the cost of doing that, but if somebody calls in and says, I want to let Representative Boone know how I feel about this bill, we put them into her voicemail box and they're able to leave a message for her. We also conduct a training session for members of the public at the start of every session, where we will go through information about resources that are available. We'll show the how to testify before a committee video. We've even brought in lobbyists and lawmakers to speak to the members of the public. And we've had fairly good attendance at these. And it's something that we do early in session, probably the first week. And folks who maybe think they want to be involved can come in and pick up some pointers on how to make their involvement as positive as possible.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Is there a chance we could get a copy of cover and bullets of what you go through, and so we get some idea of what is involved in that training?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Pryor, I'd be happy to get the agenda from the previous training and share that with
Great.
The committee members.
Thank you.
Part of this commission's charge, Dave, is recommending ways to improve the public interaction with the legislature. I mean, very impressive website and wide open. I mean, it's shoot the moon here. In your best world with unlimited budget, what else can we do to make Oregon the legislature for the 21st century, as we've discussed?
I think that the best thing that we could do right now would be to expand our video coverage and get it available throughout the state.
To have a O-SPAN, or a version of C-SPAN, essentially? Or?
What we've dubbed it as the Oregon Channel, yes, an unedited gavel-to-gavel coverage that would be available statewide. And as I said, we're in discussions with OPB and SOPTV, Southern Oregon Public Television and Oregon Public Broadcasting, and it is our hope that we can put together a partnership. They're interested, we're interested. They have issues where they need some money invested in infrastructure to go from analog technology to digital technology. We have some of those same issues internally. We're able to chip away at it every 2 years when we'll add a little bit of equipment. But that is something that we think would be a great way to let people throughout the state observe what's going on.
Ms. Pryor.
I know that the circuit courts, at least out on the east side where I am, have just put in a new system. It's two-way interactive. Now, I know there's some of that around the state, too. Are you talking about connecting with any of that? Or?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Pryor, we have video teleconferencing capability, and we use that on a regular basis during session. We have had people testify from remote locations where it's hard for them to get to Salem, so we will set up in a hearing room just like this and have interaction between a committee and somebody in Eastern Oregon or Southern Oregon. We also have legislators who use it on a, I don't know if it's a weekly basis, but nearly so, to conduct basically town hall meetings. The Southern Oregon delegation, based around the Medford area, will do this. I think it's every Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they'll come in early in the morning, and some of the members will be here, and they connect with a group in Southern Oregon where they know they can have this two-way interactive discussion.
How do people find out about that? Who do they call? Where, are you the contact point, your office?
Yes, our office would be the contact point on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Would any of your thoughts on the O-SPAN network, for lack of a better word, would any of those involve legislation?
Mr. Chair, they would involve money.
Money.
So legislation in the form of a budget appropriation, yes.
Okay. And we're talking ballpark figure?
Ballpark figure. Now I'm going to turn to my expert, and I'm going to ask Bill Gross to join us. Bill has managed this project and has put together a lot of the numbers. They're very rough because OPB and SOPTV have not been able to give us any firm figures. Mm-hmm. We've got some internal ideas, and we've got some ballpark ideas, so I'll let Bill address that.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Bill Gross, Legislative Media Supervisor. I think in terms of ballpark, the best comparison I can give you at this point, since we're still in discussions with partners, is to look at the costs that have been incurred by similar efforts in other states. And I think you're looking at a build-out figure, probably $4 to $6 million, and then a annual operation of probably $1.6 to $2 million, and okay. Somewhere in that figure.
All right. Dave, you mentioned that you do training for the public. Are you involved with many of the suggestions that have been provided to this committee have to deal with legislative training, training legislators, training legislative staff? Is that a function of legislative administration?
Mr. Chair, we're involved in that, but most of that training is coordinated through the chief clerk or the secretary of the Senate. They feel that The training needs to be specific to each house, and they work very closely with the leadership offices to provide. They work with the leadership offices to develop the agenda and invite the presenters. And so we're in a support role on that, mostly coordinated through the desks.
Any other questions, comments from committee members?
I learned a lot. Thank you.
Anything we're forgetting to ask you, Dave?
Pardon?
Anything we're forgetting to ask you?
Nothing that I can think of. The last page of the memo that you have from me talks about physical access to the Capitol. We take that very seriously. Our efforts to allow access to people of any ability through our sound amplification systems and our handicap accessibility, we take very seriously, and we're constantly looking at ways to improve that.
Would you be involved in security at the Capitol as well?
It's fair, yes.
And I know there was an incident last session with the fellow with the knife, and there are no scanners. There are no, as you have to go through to get into the U.S. Capitol. What's your outlook on that?
That's correct. We have involved the Marion County Sheriff's Office and the Oregon State Police in developing recommendations for improved security here in the building. Some of those recommendations have been implemented. Others are still in the process of being considered. We're always updating our procedures, and we will continue to do so.
Okay. Oh,
go ahead.
No, I just have a silly comment.
I've heard the criticism that toward the end of a session, it's very difficult for some interest groups to keep track of progress of legislation that committees hearings are called on a snap basis and so on. Is your system able to follow that kind of stuff?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Herring, not on a real-time basis. Parts of our system are updated real-time. Parts of it are updated every 15 minutes. Parts of it are updated only in the evening when we process our information. So that is on our project list to get to the point where information is either real-time or as near real-time as possible. But right now, some of that information doesn't get updated until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when we run our batch processing.
The reason I ask, we're charged with worrying about the perception of the legislature and the criticism of it. And I've never heard anybody complain that they can't get into the Capitol or that people are unfriendly or that I think we used to hear complaints about parking every once in a while. You can't park here without getting a ticket. But I think that's been fixed with the 10-hour meters. But it's that kind of thing that really gets to the heart of it, and that is the machinations of the legislature itself, especially toward the end of the session, that lead to criticism. And no matter how technical you want to get about trying to keep the information flowing, it's just hard to do that in the face of a willful attempt not to disclose, I guess, is what it boils down to.
Would you care to criticize any legislators, Dave? Well, just between us.
Mr. Chair, I believe I will pass. Thank you, though.
Just prior to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I noticed last session, at opening day, there were police everywhere, and they searched everything. And then the next day, after Debbie was sworn, I guess you didn't care. It was okay. Open season.
This is Lindy.
We pack our own pieces.
Chairman, I wanted just to ask one question of the person who knows about costs. If you were in the private sector, you're outside wanting a website for some individual, wants one, doesn't know how to do it himself, about what the cost be of having one?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Lindy, I wouldn't want to hazard a guess, and I don't know if Mr. Sweeney would care to hazard a guess as to that either.
Chair, committee members, actually, the cost for having a website is pretty reasonable. The actual obtaining a URL or a domain name, it ranges anywhere from roughly $10.
Yeah, I know that isn't the cost. I'm talking about having somebody who runs it for you, who actually does the updating and keeps track of it.
That depends on the amount of data transferring,
sure.
But boy, I would say an average web operator, if you will, is, I would say, beginning salary, mid salary is $70,000 a year, if that's what you're looking for, just for someone.
No, it could be an industry doing it. I mean, if you're in private business and you want to have your weekly specials and so on and so on, and you have to pay somebody to do it. What is the? I don't know much about the economics of websites.
I guess it would just be the board members, Chair, the cost of developing the material and putting it out there, again, depending on the amount of data, it could be, say, if it's an hour's worth of time a week, $100, $75 versus...
Okay, let me give you an example. One of the things we heard was that the members' websites allows them to put out press releases when they want to put one out, and I guess they send it down to the office in some fashion, they put this one out. I suppose you wanted to do that from some other position. I'm not talking about using your system. I'm talking about a private economy. If you wanted to do the same thing, get out a press release a day. Mm-hmm. Whom do you have to pay for that? How does that work?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Lindy, we could do some research on that and report back.
Would you?
That would be helpful.
I tell you, there's a very simple question why. Mm-hmm. One of the obvious concerns, I'm not on this committee, I'm in one of the other committees, which is going to be more concerned with elections. If you look at what you're seeing here, it's of course from the perspective of incumbents and the institution dealing with people who already know that they would like to deal with the legislature, okay? Now, suppose that you are thinking of becoming a legislator. How much do you have to budget from the beginning of filing date until the election time to do exactly, put the same amount of information out and the same number of messages or press releases or so on out as a member does?
That's every campaign has a website now.
I know, and I'm wondering what they cost. That's basically what I'm curious about.
We'll do some research on that.
Would you
back.
Please? Thank you.
And look for lindy.com coming to you.
That was 20 years ago. Then
okay. Representative Boone?
Well, I just want to make it real clear, too, that we do not use, I don't use my member website to put anything having to do with campaigns on it.
That would be illegal, I would assume.
It would
so,
be
yeah.
Very much so. I can't use my phone, my computer, any of that stuff. So if it's campaign oriented.
If you can define where useful information for the constituencies ends and
campaign
and
begins.
And persuasive material that you're a good legislator begins. I don't know that.
But it leads to a question, Dave. Can you deny putting things on if Debbie were to give you a campaign thing? Is it your job to say, we cannot put this on?
Mr. Chair, yes, absolutely. And we're very cautious about that. We don't even allow links from the legislative site to any campaign-related sites. Mm-hmm. And believe me, if somebody finds one of those out there, we hear about it right away, right. And we address it immediately. They can if they've got a separately maintained site that they're not paying for with their official dollars, they can have a web campaign website, they can link to websites, but from the legislative website, we do not allow any links to any campaign sites of any sort.
Okay. Marjorie, did you?
No.
Okay, did prior?
You said this has been up since 95, more or less. Was that what
right.
You said? Give me an idea in the last, say, 5 years. How often have you had to update the software and the hardware for this?
Chair Kim Chuck, board members, that I'm really not the one that should answer that. We have what's called a Unix administrator who actually manages the hardware and the software for the website itself, and we could find that out, but I can't answer that.
Yeah, I was just wondering how often and what the relative cost of that is. Mm-hmm. But how often do you have to turn over those two things?
Sure. We'll check that and report along with mm-hmm. Commissioner Lindy's report.
Other thoughts, questions before we... Thanks very much, Dave, and your whole staff.
Thank
outstanding
you.
Presentation. So.
Thank you.
Hmm?
They do run
good job,
yeah, if we could only get something faster than a slow, crippled pigeon.
I guess it's a good time to address this, too. Like you said, that not everything is a real-time update, especially in the speed of things in the end. But what we did, and I can only speak for my office, but what we did was my legislative assistant was there. I had to make him leave. but he was there to help if someone called and they wanted to know how a bill was going and they'd been on the website and it wasn't. They said, well, yeah, I know it's had the hearing, but what about now? Today it's in a hearing. We could turn on the TV. We could see it. We could say, okay, they just had a work session. They passed it out of committee. And we take on that additional responsibility that for our constituency and whoever calls, basically, and let them know as accurately as we can for the time, even if it's busy, even if we have to call, we'll call the committee sometimes. I see committee people over here. Yes, I'm one of them. I'm guilty. We have told people and give them the number and say you might call, and they won't be there just until the committee's over, but when it's over, they can tell you exactly what happened. And I didn't do it very often, but it's as close as you can get to being on a real-time basis until it gets posted. Because from my position, too, looking up a bill, I wanted to see where it was. I had to do exactly the same thing, and I would turn, you know, I'd help somebody else if they're outside the building and just can't access as fast. But I had never had anybody deny me or hang up on me. And I know they're busy, too, and they're running really. Everybody's overworked at that point, but everybody's always been very, very helpful.
On our agenda that was posted on the website, the public side did say that 2 o'clock would be the time for public testimony. I know we have some people in the audience that are you here to testify or just to listen?
Actually, I was going to testify, but I would like to make a comment.
Please come to the desk and welcome.
All right.
The two of us are here.
For the record, your names, too.
We're for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm Liz Frankel, and to my right is Peggy Lynch. And first of all, I want to compliment you highly for having a public comment period. We think, as members of the public, and we've been sitting through lots of these meetings, sometimes we're the only people who don't have vested interests. And we like to think that any of the public has this kind of access. I would like to say, secondly, that we as members of the public probably use the kind of material that you just saw. It is incredibly important to us because we're both volunteers. We belong to all volunteer organization. There is no way in the world that we can make every hearing. This way we have the option of not only doing it live, but going to the archives. In conjunction with what I think about as the accountability of the legislature to the public, one of the things that is, I wouldn't say missing, but it's awkward, and that is committee votes. And lots of us are following committees carefully, and it does make a difference as to who and how people vote on a committee. Two things happen. One is that they will simply say, well, that passed. And if you're listening, that's no help. On the other hand, they sometimes, and toward the end of the session, they were using this more and more, they would say, well, if anyone has any objection, and unless you actually heard someone say objection, you didn't know who that was, who was making the objection. I think this is an accountability level that might be of interest to track. I know that organizations that look later back on how legislation came to be are very interested, but there is no, the public record is very awkward on this. It is not in the same clear form as 5-4 with the yeas and nays. Occasionally there are committees that do that, but many of them do not. All I can say is thank you very much for this. It was very interesting, and I encourage you to keep these people alive and well.
Thank you. My name is Peggy Lynch, and as Liz mentioned, we're really here first of all, in our capacity as League members and observers who then share our information with other League members, as we try to engage the public in engaging you and engaging our legislature to try to help make a better Oregon. So the very first thing that I want to say is we need the public's business done in public view. And that's the crux of the problems that we see as we see and hear cynicism about the legislature around the state. And you have all heard it, that this particular legislative session, we had the group of seven who made the final decisions on the final budget. For almost 8 months or 7 months, the legislators worked very hard at dealing with various policy issues and worked on the various budget issues. And many of the times we had an opportunity to participate in that. We had some opportunity to be able to say, yes, that's a good policy or a good law to do, or no, that's not, or we want you to spend this much money on this particular service or not. But when it came down to the final decisions, it was done behind doors. And as this morning's meeting, Senator Morse mentioned, and this was the deal that was cut, and we were told, you know, you have to vote for the package. And that's when the public gets frustrated. They feel like they've participated. They feel like they've made their case for their particular issue or their particular set of dollars to be spent. And yet all of a sudden, something's happened behind closed doors, and you haven't been allowed to participate. So having the caucuses and having the leadership and the behind closed doors meetings, having work groups behind closed doors during session, there are work groups that occur behind closed doors that are sort of cutting the deal for the law that's going to be made on X issue. And if they're not, so all I'm asking is do the public's business in public. We can get into that later. Listening via the web isn't the same as participating. The web is wonderful, don't get me wrong. It's really nice not to have to get something in the mail 3 days later about a committee that was happening the day before. So it's nice to have real-time information about what is happening if you're trying to follow a committee or you're trying to follow a particular issue. But it's not the same as participating. That's information that will help me participate. So remember that there's a distinction between offering me lots of information so that I have the ability to participate and the access and the ability to actually participate in the decision-making process. And that's really critical. And one sort of silly comment that I really wanted to make in listening to you this afternoon, Commissioner Herring brought it up. He brought up the sidewalk crossing and how the press blew that up and made it a big issue. But I wanted to sort of sit back and say, you know, I understand his comment that sort of it was a silly set of things to talk about. But the truth is, that was an issue that affected everybody who drives and everybody who crosses the street. So in fact, while it might have seemed like a really small, insignificant issue that the legislature was dealing with, it affected broad groups of people. And I say that only because it's important to remember that when various laws are made or when budgets are done, it really does affect more than just the two or three people that sit here and tell you whether that's a good thing or a bad thing to do. Lastly is that the League has sent a letter stating a much more broader set of issues that, and you do have.
Yes,
that.
We do.
Great. Great. That's all we wanted to
thank you very much for your presence here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ooh, look at that.
Great. Can I say one thing about the legislation, too, and maybe it'll help. We are asked by constituents to bring an idea they have and make it at least have a shot at the process. And so when legislators are asked by their constituents to please introduce a bill, it's almost as a courtesy to them as their representative, because it's the only other way they can do it. And if we don't do it for our own, they'll find another member, and then they sure hear about that at home, and that is a good time for people to actually, you know, say they don't represent me because I tried to get a bill, you know, through, even if it's a silly bill. There are silly bill ideas that come through, but sometimes there are very good ones that come through. And in my situation, being in a minority, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't always able to get everything forwarded that I might have wanted to because of that. And that leads into what Junkie was talking about, the majority and the minority and how much power people have to get an idea or a bill forwarded and get it through the process. Because all those things, when you get a bill drafted, anybody can draft anything they want. It does cost money. And I was very cognitive of that and trying to only forward things that were reasonable in that sense. But once they are in that process, then it's up to the majority to decide if they get assigned to a committee, then if they get heard or not. And so some of the things that do come forward, they're not from me, they're from someone else. So that's probably how those things happen.
Well, I think you're right. You're obviously right about that. my point was really a slightly different one. One was that particular piece of legislation I thought was just ill-considered. I mean, it wasn't. It was just anybody who's ever crossed the street knows that doesn't work. I think, another example of the same sort of thing is that the legislation at one time, well, I guess in 2003, tried to get the school speed zones regulated in a way that was not reported at the time at all, as far as I can tell. The first anybody heard about this was when the Department of Transportation sent out a press release a few weeks before the law was to take effect. And then everybody scratched his head. Why would they pass something as silly as that imposes a speed limit at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday when there's just no kids around? What that sort of legislation does is it reinforces the idea among people who don't like the legislation in the first place that those people don't know what they're doing on small things as well as big. I mean, that, you know, and that gets translated, I think, then to the big things. My suggestion was that only that legislative leaders or legislators as a whole just pay more attention to what they're passing for one thing, and then simply say that, look, even though this, you know, sounds good, but and somebody asked for it, this does not work. Let's not do it.
Why don't we, if we could, take a 5-minute break, and then during that time, if you want to, we'll return to the issues that have been assigned to us and kind of go through them, figure out if this is something we should spend our time with, or recommend to the commission we should spend their time with, the full commission, or whether we can just file it right now. And then we'll do that, and then we also have another presentation from the ethics, from Pat Hearn with the ethics commission, and which is scheduled for 3, but he may be here sooner, I understand, so we could take him when he arrives. So we'll start back here in 5 minutes.
So you're in a graduation, Barbara Pedrini College?
Well, I can't remember. I lived out there for a year. I worked at the
If you guys want to get to it, I think we'll go right to you. So.
What is it? Superintendent.
Yeah, he retired.
Jim Carlin. Oh, no, I know. Yeah.
I'm missing a lot.
He was, because I was superintendent at the same time. He was.
You do it?
Yeah. You know where Laura went?
Yeah, I like it.
You could check for her, so yeah.
Oops. Sitting in the wrong seat here?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, it's her chair.
Let it go.
This is mine.
Because you're so right.
It's Steve Forrest that you want.
She's not out
there.
Okay.
We'll tell him. That will make.
Okay, we'll pick up where we left off. And we have here one of the charges to this commission, areas of responsibility for this committee, are the ethics and ethics laws that cover the legislature. And here today to share an overview with us and some thoughts are Pat Hearn, the head TED of the Oregon Government Standards and Practices Commission, and Ted, is it Reutlinger?
Reutlinger,
who is the legislative counsel. And welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for coming here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. I'm Pat Hearn, Executive Director of the Government Standards and Practices Commission. What I'd like to do is just give a little overview of kind of the distinction between ethics and ethics law. Ethics means a lot of things to a lot of people, I think. We all probably create our own ethical standards, but a couple of potential definitions are a code of core values that guides our choices and actions and determines the purpose and course of our organization and lives. Or more simply stated, standards of duty and virtue that indicate how we should behave. And then the one that I don't have on my outline, but I think is very succinct, is that's what you do when nobody's looking. Mm-hmm. Oregon government ethics law, or government standards and practices law, on the other hand, is much narrower. It's not nearly as encompassing as ethics in the broader sense. It was enacted by the voters in 1974 in the aftermath of Watergate. There was a hue and cry, if you will, around the country for states to enact what were being called sunshine laws, the connotation being operate government in the light, in the open, don't do it behind closed doors or behind the people's backs. And Oregon was one of the first four states to enact such law and create the independent agency to administer the laws. It really has two primary components. The first is that it prohibits a public official from using official position for personal financial gain. And secondly, it requires the public disclosure of conflicts of interest, financial conflicts of interest, when those conflicts arise during the course and scope of carrying out one's official duties. Now, it actually applies to public officials, relatives of public officials, and businesses with which public officials or relatives are associated. And public official is defined as anyone who serves the state of Oregon or any political subdivision of the state in any capacity, compensated or not. We estimate with that kind of a definition there are somewhere around 200,000 public officials in Oregon that are subject to these statutes. And in case you haven't figured it out by now, by virtue of being on this commission, you are a public official. And, of course, some of you are in other ways as well. Ted?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Ted Reutlinger. I'm with the Legislative Council's office where I do the ethics and the lobbying statutes, among others. As Pat said, members of the legislature are required to declare conflicts of interest before they take action as members. Usually that means before they vote, committee or on the floor of the House or the Senate. And the terms are defined in the statutes these ways. An actual conflict of interest means an action, typically a vote, that would definitely result in financial benefit or financial detriment to the legislator, the legislator's family, or the legislator's business. Potential conflict is just one that might result in financial gain or detriment. The law specifically says that a member does not have to declare a conflict if their action would affect everybody in the state the same way, everybody in a particular class the same way. For example, if you are an accountant and you're voting on a bill that would affect all accountants the same way, that's technically not a conflict of interest under the statute. Finally, if you are a member of a nonprofit board and your vote would affect that nonprofit, you don't have to declare that one. The statutes do specifically say that members of the legislature have to declare these conflicts in accordance with the rules of the House and the Senate. And both the House and Senate rules have specific provisions requiring the members to declare the conflicts, describing what the conflicts are, when they have to declare them, both in committee and in the floor. But interestingly, as far as enforcement goes, the law does allow the Government Standards and Practices Commission to enforce the conflict of interest statutes. But according to a recent Attorney General's opinion, that enforcement authority actually rests with the House and the Senate themselves. The Attorney General has opined that the commission does not have the constitutional authority to enforce conflict of interest rules against members of the legislature because of the speech and debate clause in the Oregon Constitution, which protects members from things that they say and do not say in hearings or on the floor. So the legal world there is basically that if a member is accused of not declaring a conflict or inadequately declaring a conflict, then it's the House or the Senate who could then take enforcement action against that particular member.
I assume, as legislative counsel, you can't be an advocate here today for...
Correct.
Same go for you, or can you be?
Well, I can answer questions.
You can answer questions. Well, I mean obviously, the role of the whole commission here, the 30-member commission, is to search for ways to restore public faith and confidence in legislature, to make a better legislature, to create a legislature for the 21st century. And obviously this last session there was a lot of media attention given to former Representative Doyle's problems and how that, you know, the whole ethical issues that arose from that. But I guess what I'm looking at as a member, and I think others are too, is what can we do better? What do we need to do better? What are we missing ethics-wise in the legislature? Is there anything, changes that you would want us to make? I don't know if you can go that far as to speak to recommendations.
Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to respond to that, but I do need to make it clear that I'm rendering my own opinion after being in this job for 15 years.
Understood.
And speaking on behalf of my commission in any way.
You're a private citizen now.
And one thing, I just want to jump back real quick in connection with this. When we talk about the 200,000 public officials that are subject to this statute, members of the Legislative Assembly are a fractional
right.
amount of our caseload, although they garner greater media attention than other public officials. And the legislature has reacted sometimes as far as amending the statute after we've had cases involving members. It's minute. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think in 15 years we've had that I could even fill right. two hands up counting. So,
now, having studied, other legislatures around the country, it's my impression that we're still pretty lucky here, that compared to some of the scandals they have in New Jersey and New York and those type of states, that we really are, as I said, are pretty fortunate to have a...
Well, I think we are. On the other hand, I don't think that kind of corruption is scandal is confined by geographical boundaries
no.
or state borders. I mean,
no.
I get governing.com. It's a news thing on the internet every day, and they have excerpts from every single major newspaper in the country about things that go on in government. And it's in Florida, and it's in Chicago, and it's in New York, and it's in California, and it's in Utah, and it's in Arizona. I mean, it's all over the place, literally.
Well, as I've said, in a perfect world, and with your expertise from many years in the job, but as a pattern private citizen, what can this commission recommend, or what should we be analyzing to improve the legislature?
I think there should be a look taken at gifts, permitted gifts, and
The current law being?
The current law says that you can receive a gift or gifts that... don't exceed a value of $100 in a calendar year from any single source that has a legislative or administrative interest, and that's defined as an economic interest distinct from that of the public. There's exceptions to that. Actually, Ted was going to cover this later on, but there are exceptions to the gift thing. I think it's pretty obvious the reason for their existence. One is there is no limit on food and beverage that a public official may consume in the presence or of the purchaser or provider. There's an exception for gifts of entertainment. That is that a public official can receive a gift or gifts of entertainment that don't exceed $100 per occasion or $250 in a calendar year from that source with an economic interest.
So the typical example being the Blazer game.
That's that would be the Trailblazer Amendment, Mr. Chair.
Sure. So a lobbyist for the home builders, just to pick, someone, can take Representative Boone to a Trailblazer game, and that's completely, the ticket being $60, $70, is
that's
that
right, or maybe
ticket?
More.
Maybe more. But
yeah.
But there is a, so if it's more than $100, they can still take them?
No.
No.
Okay. $100 per occasion,
right.
$250 in a calendar year, and
right.
if it exceeds a threshold amount that's tied to the CPI,
right.
then they have to itemize it on their expenditure reports.
Right.
And there's very little itemization that comes in on the reports we receive. I think this year the amount is $71.
If I had a $150 ticket, great seats to a Blazer game, they would have to pay the $50 extra. I mean, the legislator would have to pay $50 for it, or?
They could probably do that and still be in compliance with the statute, okay. Yes.
Right. So you think that you were saying that we should.
Well, I think probably the gift thing is something that is worth taking a look at, yeah. And giving some consideration to.
Could you be a little bit more specific in what sense, to lower the amount or?
It could go two ways. You could lower the threshold amount, mm-hmm. or you could require reporting at a lower amount.
Okay. What's the reporting limitation now?
That's $71 on a single occasion, mm-hmm. and it elevates every year according to the CPA.
Right. So a registered lobbyist could take a legislator out for a $70 meal and never have to report it?
That's correct. Yeah. Every night.
Every night. So that there is no aggregate limit for meals and food and beverage?
No limit whatsoever.
Okay.
I think that's one. I think conflict of interest disclosure probably needs to be looked at. And there may not be anything that needs to be done there. But I think people sometimes feel there should be more detailed disclosure. Statements of economic interest, the annual verified statement of economic interest that many of us file, depending on the public position we hold.
From your experience, are there other states that have a more restrictive view of the meals and beverages in Oregon? Have you studied other states' laws?
Yes.
Or
oh, yes.
What states would
well, Minnesota in the early 90s amended their statute to require reporting, itemization and reporting of any amount over $5. And basically what it did was it closed down all the legislative watering holes in St. Paul. Kansas, as an example, currently requires reporting. Well, they introduced legislation last year, and I don't know what the result of the legislation was, but it was kind of interesting. They were going to increase their reporting limit from $5 to $15. And a lot of the pundits and political watchdogs were aghast that they would be able to receive gifts up to $15 without having to report them. So, yeah, there's definitely some other states out there. There's some that are less restrictive, some that are more restrictive.
Right.
I think those are the areas that I would consider first.
So gifts and then conflict of interest
okay. and then statement of economic interest, the okay. financial disclosure forms. All those right now require is that you identify sources of economic interest, but I don't know that the information that is called for is really very helpful to anybody who's trying to find something out.
And some ideas put before this commission also carry over to campaigns. And does your commission deal with campaigns as well?
No, Mr. Chair. That would be the Elections Division of the Secretary of State.
Okay. So the ethics, you have no say over candidate violation?
No.
So, all right. Thanks.
No.
But I'm sure you have some thoughts there as well.
Just as a citizen.
Just as a citizen, so. So sorry to have interrupted. And there's any more?
Let's see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how far did we get here? Did you get through? Mm-hmm. You didn't. Did you? I indicated that a legislative or administrative interest is an economic interest distinct from that of the public, and that the law applies not only to public officials. In other words, it says we can't use our office for our own financial gain or the financial gain of a relative, and that always bears the question. How far does this relative extend? How big of the family are we talking about? It's really very limited. It's the spouse of the public official and the children, parents, and siblings of the public official or spouse. It does not include aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, nor does it include domestic partners or significant others.
Well, I know given the biennial nature of the legislature and the fact that a lot of folks from far away have to move down here, many bring their spouses and or kids, and many employ their spouses as their legislative assistant, and that's completely, obviously, allowable. And
well, Mr. Chair, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
I don't know of any provision in rule or statute, either one, that allows it. I mean, I don't believe I could hire my spouse in
but many
office.
Legislators do, correct? And
they do.
No
they
one
hire
is,
children,
yeah.
They hire spouses, and, yeah. and so forth. I honestly don't know what if it's just something that's always been done and it continues to be done. But I'm unaware of any specific provision to permit it.
But there's obviously none that bans it.
Legislative council
mayor. Mr. Chair, that's correct. There's no statute in the election law or the ethics law that I know of that would prohibit that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then finally, honoraria is one of the permitted kinds of financial gain, but there's a variety of concepts, perceptions out there as to what constitutes honoraria, but basically honoraria is something that's given to a public official for the rendering of some service, such as giving a speech that was not decided upon ahead of time. It wasn't expected, it wasn't anticipated, because by dictionary definition, if it's agreed upon ahead of time, it's not an honoraria, it's a fee. But I've had public officials call me many times and say I've been invited to go speak at a conference and they want to give me a $500 honoraria. And my response is that you can't do it because that's not an honoraria. That would constitute a prohibited use of office for financial gain.
Does the commission do a training seminar for new legislators?
Mr. Chair, we do training for all levels of public officials throughout the state. For many sessions, I was invited to the freshman legislator orientation, but I stopped being invited 3 or 4 sessions ago, and I believe the Office of Legislative Counsel has been doing that.
Brex? Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. We've done that both for members and for legislative staff.
Okay.
On the question of honoraria, I've never heard of this before. I'm glad I'm here. But what if a legislator decided to write a book on the legislative process and it became a bestseller? Could the legislator do that?
On the legislative process? Mr. Herring, I don't know. Probably.
I mean, I have this distinction about a fee that's decided on ahead of time and one that's given on the spot. I never heard of a fee being given on the mm-hmm. spot. The speech is really good. Oh, we'll give you $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Or, no, mm-hmm. this speech stank.
The traditional honoraria would be where the host or representative of the host organization walks up to the speaker after completion of the mm-hmm. speech, shakes their hand, thanks them, pulls out an envelope and says, here's a token of our appreciation, and there's a $150 gift certificate in it. It's really not uncommon.
That sounds like more like a bribe.
After the fact, can't be.
Well, and I can tell you how, so on a federal level, for Congress and Senate, there's a total ban, of course, on honoraria. They can't take a thing. But there is an exception for books, blanket exception, which allowed Hillary Clinton to write a book and to accept money for royalties. The money that normally comes with the book industry, it's got to be a standard book industry contract. But there are members of Congress and the Senate do write books and are allowed to receive the standard industry royalties and advance payments for them.
Speaker White used to do that.
Yes, yeah.
But you're saying that if a legislator got invited to a speech to some association, either in-state or out, with a promise that, you know, if you come, they'll pay you $1,000.
No, I wasn't able to get that far yet. There's some restrictions on legislators that aren't on other public officials. A legislator may not receive an honoraria at any time for making a presentation within the state of Oregon. And then they may receive up to $1,500 outside the state of Oregon when the legislature is not in session.
This gets more Byzantine the more I mm-hmm.
ask. And the typical, along with the Blazer game, the typical concern you see in newspapers, editorially and elsewhere, is the trip to Hawaii. The legislative conference that is held in Hawaii by the legislative association. And what can members and their spouses accept there?
Members, if they're participating in their official capacity at that conference, i.e. they're making a presentation,
on a panel,
their food, lodging, and travel may be completely paid for. If the spouse accompanies, the spouse couldn't receive more than the standard $100 gift limit. So basically, the expenses for the spouse would be out of pocket.
Okay.
There, this is a good time, I guess, to mention that in 2003, the Assembly passed House Bill 3328, and one of the provisions of that bill included food, lodging, and travel for relatives of public officials when the public official was participating in an event that bore a relationship to the office. It was referred to by some in this building, I believe, as the Public Official Family Vacation Act, and got the governor vetoed that bill.
Justice Lindy, did you have a comment?
Oh, I have a little list of notes here I took. If it's my turn, I'll ask some questions.
Sure, please do.
Maybe somebody else wants to go first, no?
No, go ahead.
All right. This is not specifically about legislators to begin with, but about your overall Hogan. What would the consequences be if a person should disqualify himself from participating in some action and doesn't disclose, doesn't disqualify? What happens to the transaction? How did the Boeing deal? How would the Boeing deal play out between Boeing and the Defense Department when the negotiator on the Defense Department side then signs on as a employee of Vice President, whatever, Boeing.
Mr. Chair, Justice Lindy, that's we call that the revolving door provisions.
That's a particular rule. That's assumed a violation. That's assumed a violation. The question is, and you may not know the answer because this isn't a commission business. This isn't something that's enforced. I want to look beyond, in this ethics field, beyond just what you blow the whistle on as a penalty or some kind of. A lot of local government, and maybe you're not experts on this, but you do handle them. A great many of the volunteered local government people are not paid at all.
That's right.
Yeah. Are supposed to disqualify themselves under some circumstances from deals with they can't be engaged in self-dealing in the public sector transactions, which is the bulk of what government does. It doesn't primarily regulate anybody. It primarily runs schools, builds highways, does the real estate deals. And if there's a specific appeal from a zoning decision to the council, then the council is making a decision about zoning. It's not passing a law. What happens to the transactions?
Mr. Chair, Justice Lindy, it doesn't impact the transaction. There's no ramification for that.
Should there be?
I don't know.
Well, this is a committee that is supposed to make recommendations as to what happens after you've established that a person should disqualify himself, did participate. And made a difference, where the vote clearly made a difference in all the comments that the person made. See, it's a difficult problem, even in the legislature. You can imagine a hypothetical situation in which somebody has a farm and serves in the legislature, or a relative has a husband has the farm, the wife serves in the legislature, doesn't matter. And the state wants to buy that particular has a bill in to buy something for expanding a state park. Now, as I understand the rule, you don't disqualify yourself.
That's correct.
Even though this isn't some general law that's going to... This is specifically for your benefit. And now, how does that work?
If it were a legislator, the legislator would be required to...
Disclose it
publicly, and then... would also be required to vote.
Okay. Now, if it were a city council person or a school board member, same answer?
No, sir.
No.
That public official, such as a school board member or a city councilor, would be required to disclose.
Yeah.
And then in the case of a potential conflict of interest, they could participate.
I know.
If it were an actual conflict of interest, they could not.
Now, you made that clear. That's the general rule. But when it is an actual conflict, but they haven't disclosed it, they made the deal because it benefits them. I mean, same situation with a bribe. What happens if it's a flat-out bribe and your participation made that deal happen? Now, before the deed is written, does the local government get out of it or not? Do they have to go through with the deal? I don't think so.
It's really not addressed by the laws that we enforce.
Well,
but it's my understanding that it doesn't...
You've walked us through what the statutes say. And I want to draw your attention to what the statutes don't say, but perhaps this committee might want to consider if they ought to say. Because as a practical matter, a slap on the wrist or even a serious, I mean, just being thrown out of office, out of an unpaid office, you know, that you just don't get to be on the school board next time. It doesn't make anybody whole. The people who need to be made whole are the people whose money has been taken or whose property has been improperly taken. You see, I don't, as a former judge here, I've read a number of these cases, and I don't think the answer is it never makes any difference. Mm-hmm. The transaction always stands. That isn't the case.
Commissioner Ishida, did you have something?
Yeah, there's three amateur questions, okay, so please don't laugh at me. For example, if I'm a government official, right, lawmakers, and now I'm reporting amount, right, I didn't report it. Some bill, 2020 House bill, I'm going to vote yes anyway. Now that I'm reporting over, let's make a $150 dinner, include the wine stuff. And then I report it. I'm going to vote yes anyway. Now, that's a conflict. Now, do I get it punished because I vote? No.
No.
So, not off of just a reporting issue.
Yes.
So $150 or $50, still I'm going to vote here, okay? So if I don't report $150, then I'm in big trouble.
If it's found out, I mean, we don't have any audit authority, we don't have resources for audits, so it's really good faith reporting is all we rely on.
Owner system.
Yes.
All right. Your budget is provided for by the legislature, correct?
Yes.
One more question?
Yes.
Once you write the check to election donation, campaign donation, that official, after that, I found out how stupid he was. Well, just quite hypothetical, okay? He just voted for stupid, common sense bill. He passed it, or he voted yes.
Okay.
Now, can I ask a refund that money later?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's illegal. No, seriously, if I send a bill, hey, I give you $1,000 in the past, I found out how stupid you are. So I shouldn't use that word. I'm sorry, Commissioner. Right. Sorry, I shouldn't use that word. They're all recording here. And I said, well, I didn't realize that he doesn't have no common sense. And I sent the invoice, I want that $1,000 back. Now, is this a legal request?
Mr. Yoshida, I have absolutely no authority or expertise to speak on campaign contribution issues.
Okay.
If I'm a lobbyist who violates one of the rules, what sanctions can you place on me?
A civil penalty of up to $1,000 for each violation.
I just want to be sure I'm correcting on the example. If there is no declaration of an actual conflict, but there is an actual conflict, and I believe you said the Senate and the House have the authority to do something.
They could sanction their own members or take some kind of action, yes.
Has that ever occurred?
No.
There is no, and the U.S. House and Senate, of course, each side has a
ethics committee,
bipartisan, evenly balanced ethics committee. The Oregon legislature has no, there is no ethics committee, and never has been. Is that correct?
Not to my knowledge. After this opinion came out that Ted referred to, the leader, that was around 97 or 99, perhaps, and the leadership of the assembly that was in possession then made a media comment basically that said, we'll adopt our own rules and establish our own internal ethics committee because we're really in a better position to review that than an outside body is. And to my knowledge, that's the last that anything was ever said about it or done.
There are rules committees on both sides, and they, if I recall, they somehow deal with problems like this for the rules committee. Is that correct, Representative Boone?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the House and Senate rules do also have specific procedures
for expulsion.
For for expulsion, for censure.
In fact, they did, Senator, the late Senator Jolin, as I recall. Wasn't she expelled from...
I don't think she was.
Or did she resign in the face of expulsion?
She resigned after conviction of a felony.
Right.
And the law was in change to automatically expel a member if they are convicted of a felony
right.
during their term. But the rules do now provide for the formation of a committee on conduct in the event that a complaint is filed with respect to a conflict of interest issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just Lindy.
Two other little questions here. One is just, I mean, note when you said there's really no limitation at all, no authority about it on hiring your relatives. You've got this teenage boy who's going to go to college and he needs some money. Would it be a violation, forget about the enforcement that would come from the House or the Senate, but it would be a violation if the person did no work. It was just a pretext. You say, well, you can come and be my assistant, but in fact, he never shows up.
Mr. Chair, yes. That would be a violation of the prohibition against using office for a financial gain for yourself or a relative.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, is there any sort of an expectation about who checks on how much work is in fact done?
I'm not aware of any.
I didn't think so. I just wanted to get it from you and not not guess about it. And my other question is more important. If you wanted to strengthen the organizational structure of the enforcement office, how would you want to do it? In other words, would you want an assured flow of money to pay for investigators,
yes.
audits, if you could get it?
Yes.
You might be able to. Maybe not by buying your appropriation, but maybe you can find someone. Think about it. What else would you like besides more
well,
money?
I don't think this is a secret. To anybody who knows me, I think there's an innate flaw in the fact that the Government Standards and Practices Commission is funded virtually 100% by the Legislative Assembly, over which they have regulatory authority.
How do other states, if you know, how do they fund it?
Most of them are also funded by the general fund, but my counterparts in other states that I've talked to about this issue says that even in the aftermath of their agencies investigating legislators, that their legislature will not, quote, mess with their budget because the media would get all over them.
Right. And the reporting requirements, how often do lobbyists have to report their expenditures?
Lobbyists report twice during a non-session year, three times during a session year, and the entities they represent report only once a year.
But in this, and maybe as a private citizen, however you feel comfortable with this, but in this age of internet, and a lot of folks, including you know, back in D.C., I mean, there's instantaneous reporting almost, or requiring. Can't we do better than that?
In some states, there are indeed, and you know, it's certainly been talked about here, and we'd love to do it, but it's extremely expensive.
Sure. Other thoughts, questions? Judge Pryor, any?
I want to change the question a little bit more. May I? I'm not sure which way to go, the campaign issue or not. Somebody committed campaign for 4 years term, and that person quit 2 years after without no reason. Now, does this belong to ethic issue or just campaign issue? He's obligated to complete 4 years term. But that person inside quit 2 years after, no reason he quit.
It's not covered by ethics law.
Mr. Chair, or Commissioner Yoshida, that would be a campaign election law issue, and there's nothing in the election laws that prohibits a person from resigning an office at any time.
Other thoughts, questions from the commission? Anything we missed?
Mr. The only thing I would mention that Commissioner Lindy knows about as well, and you probably do also, is that the Oregon Law Commission was appropriated $224,000 this biennium to undertake a study of government ethics law generally, as well as where they intersect with both campaign finance and lobbying. The Law Commission has formed a program committee that's chaired by the Attorney General, and they're busy at this point rounding up people who are might be willing to serve on that, and their review will be relatively comprehensive, as I understand it, of the nature of these laws as well. And that's something that flowed out of the governor's veto of the big ethics bill in 2003. The governor specifically asked the commission to undertake that review, and they agreed to do it.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. You've been very helpful and appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
For those in the audience, what the committee here has before it is a list of recommendations, suggestions, ideas that have flowed into the commission since its inception, and the staff, along with the co-chairs, have undertaken the effort of dividing it to every committee, and this committee has been given a wide number of thoughts and ideas. And what I thought we might do in the next hour, if it takes us that long, that the time we have scheduled, is to go through this real quick and perhaps to talk amongst ourselves on the ideas that are worth further discussion, worth considering, and those that I think we can deal with fairly quickly as ones that aren't really within the bailiwick of what this commission does. So I think, does everyone have it? Page 10, I believe, is where we start.
Could I just ask one question?
Yes, Greta.
Since last time, the first meeting of the whole commission, it is just those that are 092 and beyond. Is that?
Mr. Chair, members
notes
of the commission.
On the older
yeah.
one.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. since our last meeting on September 6th, we've had so many proposals come in. A lot of them have been duplicates. Mm. So some of those proposals that you saw once before, numbers 1 through 91, have expanded a little bit. So I would say transfer your notes to the new sheet and expect another new sheet maybe in a month.
Judge Pryor.
I just want to throw something out here just for everybody to chew on for a minute, and that is this. What if we took a few minutes and talked about the big picture issues? There may be a way that we could tackle some of the big picture issues. And let's say we're going to do that for the next 3 months or 4 months or something, and then come back and take a look at all of this stuff and say, okay, how many of these things have we actually dealt with in looking at those big picture issues rather than going through all of this right now?
Okay,
it's just
fine.
A suggestion that maybe that would be a way that we could tackle it, because I think some of these things, a lot of them really relate to trying to get to some of these big issues.
Well, along that line, and everyone chip in here, for me, I think the two big issues facing this committee, one, I think, would be ethics, obviously. I mean, I think that was a very powerful presentation that we just heard, and I see right away some recommendations that I believe we should discuss, gifts, reporting requirements, budget for the Government Standards and Practice Commission. I think that's where we could really make a difference and improve the public view of the legislators. I think ethics as a broad general subtext. Some of the stuff I think in here that establish and enforce a dress code or provide uniforms, that's out the door right away. I mean, that's just not even worth discussing in my view. Yeah, no dress code. So Governor Kitzhaber would never have been governor if there had been a dress code. And then the other, I think the other good stuff from my view of this is training, some sort of training of the legislature classes or of staff. And Debbie, I don't know what, if any, training you received. You had been a staff member, but I know in the federal government, again, using my experience with the Senate and the House, once elections are held every other November, that immediately there are high-level, very effective seminars for new members, which I know they do some sort of that here.
Our chief clerk
did that for that's members.
Okay.
And
which is nonpartisan she, training.
Nonpartisan, yeah.
And she also does a week-long training for
okay.
an orientation for staff, just in the week before session opens.
But I would invite other other commissioners to, as you made your way through the things that have been before this committee, were there any ideas that struck you as important, incisive, necessary? But Debbie, if I could, one more thing. Debbie, the in-district offices, is that something that...
Unless they're funded.
Well, obviously, they have to be funded.
Yeah.
But is that just another occasion for more bureaucracy and more staff and more...
I would think that people, and I can just speak for myself, you know, in my position, I'm about 2 hours from the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not reasonable for me to have people meet me in this office as far as constituents. And I meet in local coffee shops. I work out of my home or my car. And it would be nice to have an office where you could keep things. People could meet you there because it's not always convenient to have people meet in your home or in a coffee shop or whatever. But this is actually not the first time I'd heard of this. And this, they don't, in our present office allowance isn't enough to even keep a staff person, really, which is why you might see members of families hired part-time,
right.
Because you don't have enough money to operate the office. It operates this office and whatever. It's just a set amount, and how you use it. You can have a well-paid person for 3 or 4 months,
right.
But otherwise you don't.
Getting the work of this committee is tied into all the others, and you know the big recommendation, of course, that the commission might be looking at is the annual sessions. Which, and if we were to recommend annual sessions, of course, then everything would flow to more different money for staff or different payment or all that. Another idea that really fascinated me here is, but I don't know if it's in this committee or commission to recommend, it's just a good idea, is to establish a legislator exchange program between urban and rural legislators. To send the legislator from Portland to the day to John Day or to Gillum County. But that's more common sense than anything I think we should recommend. It would be nice if they did it, but I don't know if that's in our purview.
Well, isn't the in-district comment related again to the general topic of public access?
Right.
And perhaps the training covers this, but right. I admit from the previous presenters, not this last set, but from the previous presenters, I had some ideas about how public access could be encouraged, or strategies you can use, or tools that are already available that maybe are not consistently used. Maybe it's having a feature of the training be about how to develop public access.
Yeah, I don't think the problem with the legislature is the public doesn't know how to use the internet. I mean, that I think was, that you might want to.
And there's a lot of that goes on too from different venues, and most members have town hall meetings or local, you know, where they're accessible that way, or they are accessible, you know, people have an in-district phone or whatever, even if it's their cell phone, and it's just up to the local press. And in my district, except for one instance, it's all weekly or every other week papers, so they'll usually print local contact information there. And they will print, you know, in the calendar when meetings coming up. But I think everybody handles that differently. I'm not sure. Some people have a better access to have a weekly coffee meeting, for example, you know, in some areas over others because of the geographics of it. Like, go over on Laura's side of the hill, you'd be busy 28 hours a day if you tried to have a weekly meeting and hit everywhere that her the constituency lives. It's easy to do in downtown or in Northeast Portland or Southeast Portland.
And that leads me back to the whole discussion that I hope we would get to. What does this state look like? And number 42, 154, and 162 have to do with relationships between the different branches of government. Legislative branch, the executive branch, local government, and state government. Relationships between the legislature, the governor, and boards and commissions. It has to do with this public institution and the pieces of it, and how do those pieces of governance connect to deal with all these myriad of issues that have to come before this legislative body? How do we do that?
Well, somehow do they...
aren't there lots of ways in which... I mean, this is a very small state when you think about it. And it's not as though anybody was isolated from anybody else these days. If somebody realizes that, that something that the legislature is considering affects home rule counties, for example, wouldn't the first thing be for the for a home rule county commissioner to get on the phone and say, hey, did you think of that?
And isn't that what the League of Oregon Cities and the League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties, that's why they exist, isn't it?
It is, but there isn't any mechanism except in testifying. There isn't any mechanism where you can come together and you can say, okay, we're going to fix the assessment and taxation program in the state of Oregon. How do we do that? You're going to end up out here 20 minutes, if you're lucky, out of a session trying to figure out how to tell people to do that.
I want to support this line of questioning. I don't know where we're going with it, but this is where we maybe overlap with the operations committee. But if they don't address how the public voice, how this is a public institution, instead of just...
But it's not just that it's a public... Mm-hmm. I'm talking about governance.
No,
in
I
the
know
state.
What you're saying.
Although, this word, I find it difficult to tell... You know, if I were governor, or if I were speaker, if I were president of the Senate, I would create a commission, or I would create a blue room panel, or I would bring everyone together. But whether we can recommend a state office of government, you know, whatever, that's a different thing.
There are states that have vehicles.
Right.
And they only come together when you're talking about the nuts and bolts of a system. Mm. How does this work? And if you have that, then legislators from Coquille will have a better idea of how that same system works in NISA. Where right now, let me give you a good example. Land use planning. In land use planning, they took into consideration, to an extent, the different soil classes across the state. Somebody had to tell people that because they didn't know that. But if you had a way where you could come together and you could say, how is this going to affect you, the system, we'd all be better off. The legislature would be far better off. 1145, when they did the jail thing, only getting into trying to create more jail beds did they realize that that was going to affect the law enforcement system and the court system. It wasn't just the jail beds. That if you... It's like hydraulics. If you push over here, it's going to pop out over there because everything's interconnected. But we don't have a chance to have that discussion because every 2 years, and Debbie, you jump in here. This is just my take on this. Every 2 years when you come in this building, you don't have time to really talk about what are the consequences going to be of this. And the
but isn't it true, as Carrie suggested, that the League of Oregon, the County Association and the League of Oregon Cities have legislative staffs that comb every bill that's introduced, that make long lists of potential consequences of everything, that activate their members to call their legislators, and that actually do legislating, they do appear, and they do a lot of work behind this. I mean, they meet with legislators, explain stuff. Isn't that working?
I've been the Association of Oregon Counties on the Legislative Committee for 18 years, and if I thought it was working well, I wouldn't bring this up. There isn't any time. Debbie, you tell me if you think, does this work?
You do have very limited time. For example, this session we started on the 12th or 13th of January, and 1 month later, actually we extended it another week, it ended up, but 1 month later all the bills are due, to be the final date for submitting legislation. And then they're assigned, and then they're to committees or not, and then the hearings start. And they started shutting down committees, I think, in April. And Marjorie probably could speak to some of this, too. But it's when you consider there are 400 or 4,000 bills that are introduced, and... It's very overwhelming. It's true. And Commissioner Pryor is absolutely right. There is, and you're right too. There is a process, and that does happen. But sometimes those lobbyists are overwhelmed also by the pile that they have to manage, and they may miss something or they may not explain how intricate whatever. For a good example is when you end up with a bill that funds, for example, enough money in one agency to handle a meth problem, for example. Let's take that's a big deal. It affects police agencies, it affects district attorneys and courts, and then it affects prisons, and it affects community corrections. And what if you fund everything on this end, but not at the front end? If you don't, you know, in other words, if you don't have enough money up front for the cops to get the bad guys in the first place, how does the process work smoothly and it also depends on how much money you give to these other counties, for example, for their prosecution costs or whatever.
Well, what happens is the system, whatever the system is, mm-hmm. gets out of balance mm-hmm. some way. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have time to really talk about and analyze how the system works, then it gets out of balance. And then they come back in another couple of years and find out that, well, everybody's locking everybody up now because we've got all these jail beds and the court system's backed up. Mm-hmm. So the issue is that you're looking at the legislature and this new century and what is it you want it to be. What I'm saying is I think if you, okay, give it more time. Maybe they'll meet annually. Maybe more time will help. But I don't think it's just that, because what we're not seeing is connections, the interconnectedness of things.
But to me,
the reason I seem to resist whatever you're suggesting, whatever that might be, mm-hmm. is that I think one of the troubles of the legislature is that life is too complicated already.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the general public has practically given up on mm-hmm. trying to keep track of what's going on or to influence what's going on. They just simply react to when something comes down the line, and then there's all hell mm-hmm. made and initiatives and all that stuff. And I think, so they're creating another set of institutions, conferences, you know, joint county, state, city conferences that have to meet every once in a while, that have to pass on certain things before the legislature can consider them and all that kind of stuff. I think that sounds tempting, but it just adds to the complication of life in Oregon that I think citizens would rather do without. If it's true that there's not enough time for considering the implications of legislation on all the people that might be affected, all the institutions, the counties and cities and so on. Well, maybe we ought to talk about the time. It is always seems strange to me that the legislature is under such pressure to adjourn by a certain time. I'm sitting there in Albany writing about the legislature. I don't care if they adjourn or not. they're not hurting anybody. Most of the time, and so it seems to me one way to create more time would be simply to say, look, you guys meet however long you want until you get all this stuff taken care of, or it would be to, and one of the ways to do that would be, you know, annual sessions, fine, but that's kind of a red flag for a lot of people. I don't think there's anything in the Constitution at the state that the legislature has to adjourn on a particular time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could meet once a week, you know, the first week of every month, forever, or for 2 years anyway. And nobody, at least I wouldn't complain. But
that would have repercussions, of course, with what type of people ran for the legislature and who could afford to take a week every month.
I mean, 6 or 7 months out of your life, you can't have a job anyway. But if you had, you know, the first week of every month, you might be able to make arrangements. I don't know. But the point is, it would provide for a more leisurely legislative approach. And it would do away with this last-minute hurry-up doing a bunch of stuff that nobody knows what it is, and then 6 months later somebody realizes all the mistakes have been made. Either that or, on the other side, limit the amount of work that has to be done. I mean, I don't know why we need 800 new laws every other year. Surely we can get along without with what we got, even though it might be a little inconvenient sometimes, might be,
I think you might have to do both. I mean, have a more leisurely time frame to identify the implications. But if you don't also limit the number of bills, we'll just have 8,000 instead of 4,000.
Yeah, and I'm not thinking that maybe Congress is the best example of life, but but when you read, I mean, you follow Congress, they don't do something important every day or even, I mean,
right.
Sometimes not all year. Okay, maybe that's not what we want, but if three or four major pieces of legislation have to be handled, some of them affect counties, you know, you take the vote when you have it. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, or until you do, there's all kinds of discussion, I mean, all kinds of time to hold discussions with everybody affected, for everybody to weigh in on what's going on. I mean, that would be one way to take the pressure, the time pressure out of it. That seems to be, I mean, the time pressure seems to be at the root of a lot of stuff we're talking about.
And one of the temptations, Judge Pryor, maybe I'm just too jaded, I haven't been in this process for long, but it's tempting to try to legislate competence. We can't. That's not our job. And, you know, it'd be great if we could pass, you know, this commission recommends that, like I said, all legislators get along and everyone work together and talk to one another and see the repercussions of every decision. But that's what we elect people for, to some degree. We hope we elect someone who can see that and can do that. I find it hard to find a recommendation to force people to look ahead.
But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the interconnectedness of our systems that nobody's looking at, and we're paying for it all the time. Yeah. We're paying for it constantly.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. HASA's got a handle on one end of it, which allows more time to be able to consider all the issues that it might be involved. But there's also a pressure for, and you see it in the paper, as we get near the end of session or after the, I don't know what it is. We're not required to end at a certain point, but there becomes a 6 month time where everybody says we should be finished by the end of June.
That's because it's a citizen legislature,
right?
Unlike Congress and the Senate, where that is their full time job,
right.
And there's
that's
less.
But if they talk about the cost of per
schools
day.
Need budgets.
Schools need budgets,
yeah.
Correct? So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'll give you another one that's going to happen. And I can give you 50 of them that have happened in the past, but I'm going to give you one that you can all relate to. Most of the roads in Oregon are funded by timber revenues. If Congress does not reauthorize the safety net bill, you're going to have the largest segment of the system in the state of Oregon go down. What we ought to be doing right now with the legislative, some committee, talking about, you got 40,000 miles of road in this state and 23,000 of it is going to go down. We know that. I'm sitting here. We all know that. But we are not talking about it as a major attack on a major system, a major component. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about is if you have a major system in the state that you know is going to take that kind of a hit, something's going to happen. Thank God this one, at least we see it coming. You'd think we'd be talking about it. But there isn't any mechanism that brings the three owners of the system, ODOT, cities, and counties, to the table now to talk about.
Well, if I were the governor, I'd be sitting everybody down. I mean, we agree 100% that could be an issue. I think, frankly, that Congress will pass it. But if they don't, I agree. But that, again...
And if they pass it, at what level, Carrie?
But again, I think we're legislating competence there. That's the job of the governor to get the counties and cities together.
You think it's the governor.
Or whoever.
Sure.
But that's not... I don't think this commission has anything to do on that. So, yeah.
I don't know that it's the governor. Mm-hmm. I think it's a question of governance, because that will end up right in this room. That will end up in the legislative body.
I think you're right on about the concerns. I just don't see how this committee or commission can make recommendations, substantive recommendations that would change it. So I understand your concerns. No one knows better than you do.
Well, I guess I thought maybe we just talk.
Yeah, we could. That's a good idea.
Well, one of the things I'd like to add to what Laura is saying, too, and might help, is in developing policy, if we could recommend that prevention at the bottom end or at this one end is considered, and look at the big picture of, if we put this bill in, it becomes law, how does it affect the systems down the line? For example, getting back to the meth issue, how that has so affected the local area's need for foster parents, for example. And that's a state job, and so in some areas it's worse than others, but, you know, it's an increase in the workload for some people at certain levels, which would cost additional money, you would think. And or it piles on to work, and then you have attrition or...
Another thing I sit in here time after time and after time and see is we knew when the fishery was going to go out. We knew when the timber was going to take a hit. We knew when ag was going to take a hit. And yet the legislative body only hears what is going to be this quarter, the fourth quarter's projections or the first quarter's projections. They don't get a look at what's happening across this state. That does not happen at this legislature. They just wait for that fourth quarter report or something to figure out what they're going to do with the money. And yet there's a whole mass of stuff that's happening to the economy of the state of Oregon in the major sectors, and you don't hear it.
Well, Laura, I don't know if I could agree with that characterization of life, but I mean, all these 90 legislators come from somewhere. They're not completely isolated. Their phone numbers are available. The county commissioners are on the phone to them quite often. Ours are. I know that. So I don't know why they wouldn't know why no. Some of this stuff would be coming up.
Do you talk about it here?
What's
the major things that are happening?
I think there's a certain amount of that, of course. And I think it depends on who you talk to and what comes up, you know, in discussions and how things will affect those issues. And I mean, and I have a fairly small district in that sense. There are people I'll call back in the district and ask, what is your opinion of this? What if we do this? And they'll say, this is going to increase the cost for the farmers, blah, blah, blah. And with the hit they're taking on that and with what we're being asked to, you know, cover. So I think it's dependent on the people and how widely they seek advice. But you're right. In a lot of cases, it's not in the general, when you're sitting up here at the dais and a bill comes through, there's only 2 hours per committee hearing time. And so you have an agenda. You have to, the chair has to manage the time just like we do here. And you can set things over, or in some cases we would say, okay, we're going to open this hearing, tap, tap, and we'll have another work session on it when we get more information, or something will come up in discussion and charge that, and that's what will happen. I think that's just by chance, though.
But, you know, I don't want to harp, but again, I don't think the role of this committee is to be the babysitter for the legislature, to tell you, have three-hour commission hearings or four-hour commission hearings. I mean, that's common sense. It's confidence, as I say. I mean, you're here to deal with the big issues, and if you don't deal with them, I mean, we can't make you deal with them. We can't force you to.
We're actually only here to produce a budget. And then we do all the other mischief in the spare time.
Well, I wonder if you were kind of on a roll with trying to identify what, it's just as a draft list.
Right.
The things that really might be in the purview of this group,
right.
Ethics.
Yes.
Training. Mm-hmm. Now, there may or may not be something around public access. I mean, in our draft, we could put that down as
right.
Something to look at. Then this whole business that we've just been talking about, and maybe there's a general term, it maybe has to do with time and volume
right.
of bills and getting traction on either the connections on the important things or just the important things
and,
in general.
And I know some of the ideas thrown out were to have a legislature start in March or April or something like that.
Or have a limit on the number of bills that any one legislator could introduce. Maybe there's just a collection of things that we could put in a lump for now see if there's another lump or two that we need to consider.
All right.
At least have the overview.
Yeah, I think the intention of the next meeting in November would be that I think each commission chair or whatever each committee chair will report as to the meeting and what happened. And so, but I think we're on a good track here. I think we all agree that I think ethics, from what we heard today, is I think the biggest issue before this committee, I think, that we could make a real difference on. I mean, there's something we can make recommendations.
I mean, do you think that that the ethics of the legislature is a big issue with Oregon voters? I don't get that feeling. Yeah. Nobody's ever called me about that, on that particular thing.
Do you think it's indirect? Do you think it's indirect?
Well, maybe it is, but I just don't. I don't think there's any undercurrent here that Oregon politics is any dirtier than any place else. I just don't see it. I mean, maybe I'm blind. Maybe we have a lapdog press that doesn't pay attention.
No, I'd have that. But just the last session with the Doyle story and with all that. And I see, you know, I kind of agree with you, Hassel. I think the legislature is held in the same regard as it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. But I think we can still make recommendations that will carry the system forward and prevent problems.
Well, I think this question about gifts is a useful one. I've never quite understood why anybody would take any gift from anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, just what's just gift giving? Mm-hmm. I mean,
what about the rotary mug after my speech?
The question
okay?
of, you know, when you go to the that's right. I mean, when you make a speech at a service club, they give you a mug.
Is that okay? I need to know.
Yeah, I guess.
Usually under $50, yeah. So.
But beyond that, I don't see what all this gift-giving amounts to. Why legislators can't say, well, I'll pay my own lunch check? It's beyond me.
Or the trips to Hawaii.
That's different, I think. Yeah. You know, but you're absolutely right. I mean, if you want to go to lunch with a person who happens to be a lobbyist and happens to be your friend, it didn't used to, but now that's coming up. You know, should I pick up the check? But I think a lot of people just have a personal policy to pick up the check for themselves, so it's not an issue.
Well,
What about the issue of the legislature policing themselves on ethics? What about that part of the ethics?
Well, I think that has to be that way. Otherwise, you can't have a democratic government. You can't have some agency grasping into the legislature and plucking out members on various charges. That can't be done. That's why assemblies like ours always have to be the judge of their own members.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's not an issue.
But I think more money for the Government Standards and Practice Commission is a something we could debate.
Okay, so maybe that comes out of the issue.
Kelly, is it public, kind of a, something I agree with him, but is it public, and including my wife too, are they really, really concerned about ethics? That's how much lawmaker drinking, eating with conflict interest side of it. I thought we were concerned about disconnecting. We, a public, disconnecting, or lawmaker disconnecting from us. That is if a lawmaker eating breakfast with some conflict interest based on eating IHOP, maybe we don't concern. Well, if they're eating El Gaucho, wait a minute, those guys eating something higher, more expensive, but something wrong going on there. But I thought that we are more concerned about disconnecting issue.
The image of the legislature.
Right. It's not for they're getting $50 and they don't have to report it, and the $75 they have to report it.
Although that does have, I think, relate to their image, whether or not their members think they're honest.
Image came from our people, people.
But to go back to the general things, we do have ethics in some fashion.
Yes.
Maybe we still need to hone in on
and training.
Training, but also, and I want to support what you're saying, the whole connecting the public access.
Mm-hmm.
That's another arena.
Although, I mean, from what I heard today, I don't have many concerns with the options that are out there for the public to connect with the legislature.
So maybe the issue is how to make sure the public knows.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then it's reporting amount going to be increasing every what? What is it? $71 right now? But that like of a gift stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That they go up.
It goes up with the inflation.
Yeah.
Inflation.
Yeah, consumer price index.
Okay.
It's tied every year to go up.
Right. So inflation is something to do with their conflict interest. Judgment.
Interest. What about doing the public business in public?
I think that relates
to the public access
to caucuses and whether or not there was an issue as to whether caucuses should have their meetings in public or private.
Or even being in the building.
Is that something that floats? Yeah. having worked in the process, I can tell you that some meetings have to be quiet. Is that an issue this committee wants to tackle and move on to the next meeting to raise that? Whether this commission should recommend that, because obviously we can't mandate anything, but whether we should recommend to the legislature that they open up all their caucuses.
Why don't we just take that as one of our group things that we're just going to kind of work on?
Move ahead.
Is
so
the Democrats doing open to public, right? The caucus?
The Senate
did, and right. I think they weren't very happy with how it went. So
that's how I heard.
Yeah.
Sometimes I hate to say this, but a certain group, you know, easy to talk from the closed door.
Yeah.
And when newspaper people, they got to really watch out how I say it. So you should have given certain freedom to those level, close the door, to they can, you know, spit everything out.
So I think that is one thing that we should discuss fully, though, if we decide not to do it, then we've got kind of a record of why we decided that we weren't going to move that forward. I don't think that's something we should just avoid.
Any other big issues we should kick down the road? Or, I mean, like, you know, one of these things, Marjorie, was determine if hearing rooms are adequately equipped for video and audio coverage. Well, obviously they are. I mean, I don't know if that's anything we can have any expertise
on. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I explained to you in a note, the Facilities Committee next Wednesday will have an extensive presentation on the video project that Dave Commissioner was talking about earlier today. So I'm sure they will gladly take on that.
And the committee that has the initial conversation on annual sessions and time limits on sessions would be the process?
At this point, all of the annual sessions, length, time, frequency, purpose of session is assigned to the process.
Have they met yet?
No, they plan to meet on the 18th of October.
Okay.
The one thing that I guess I would like to make sure we keep on our agenda is the public notice of the committee hearings and the timing, because some of the and my district is within 2 hours, so
number 78 on your list, I think, deals with that.
But the people from the east side, I mean, having just driven to Burns last week for meetings, and it took me 7 hours from home, and that's without stopping, and that's a long haul day for somebody. And then say they have a hearing, their committee hearing is going to be at 3:30 or something like that. And they come all the way over to testify on a bill, and they get here, and they find that throughout somewhere during the hearing, either it's been taken off the agenda or it's been canceled, or we say, well, we don't have time to hear this, we're going to move this over. So they have a tap-tap, and then they move it over, and we'll have it again. And then they really can't manage that, and it really makes them angry. Mm-hmm. And if I always tell people in my district, and of course it's not the 7 hours thing, but I tell them, you know, if you want to testify, you want to weigh in on this, there's a chance it may not be heard today or whatever, especially near the end, things happen quickly. Fax us something, email something, I'll make sure that it gets entered into the record, and I will personally come up and say on behalf of my constituent so-and-so, but that's an option. It's not always satisfactory to people because they have a strong passion for it, and their issue is basically having the heads up time, and they know that it's quick even if it's 48 hours, but when it starts getting crunched down, and then it's even we in the building have to send staff people down and say, make sure, you know, go down, physically get out, leave your post, go down and see if a bill's going to be heard or not, if it's on the agenda, is it on the first or is it second, or we watch it on TV. And If it's tedious for us and this is what we're doing, it's got to be really tough for someone out there. And when it's changing, that's the issue. Is I don't think they mind things to change, but they think
notice.
It's the notice. If it gets so small that unless they have a helicopter, they can't make it.
So a 48-hour required. And it currently is a 48-hour notice?
I think that's
in the House and the Senate. Yes. They do require the 48-hour
okay.
notice.
And it gets down to a point where it's 1 hour notice.
During the last days of session.
Yeah,
so,
and that's just what happens.
Yeah, you know, you just have to be here.
Yeah,
you
and at that
down
point,
and stay for a week because
we advise people
you
that
just can't get here.
So it's okay the way it is if it's followed until the last days of session.
Yeah,
but more it's the knowledge about how to get your word in along
and that's,
the way.
I think it's what we saw today, how accessible it is on the web, and by phone and by fax, and I mean, unless you're just so far out there, and I know Laura knows people that might be, and or they're busy. Like, I have my fishermen. They're out at sea. And, yeah, everybody has sat phones and stuff, but, you know, that's they're fishing. They're not monitoring, and they need to have notice if something important is going to happen to them. They need to know ahead of time, and they'll call somebody and get somebody there.
How about in the course of the next week or so, if committee members want to email Marjorie and myself with other thoughts or recommendations, and then we'll put together a little summary report that I would be presenting at the full commission meeting, and to try to include everything, and we'll give that a try. But I think it's been a very helpful meeting and has limited our view and issues we need to tackle. Judge Pryor, do you have?
I just want to ask you a question. On training, it's both staff and legislators, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Lobby. Agencies, all of that, anyone who touches space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And public.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a review of the training to make sure it's...
And, you know, that has really been helpful. I've worked in this building for about 17 years now, and that's relatively new, and it's very helpful, and it's very, they do a very good job. And it's across the board. It's both sides of the House and Senate. And I think they cover all the issues because they're dealing with... Well, it makes Marjorie's life easier, I'm sure. When people know how to deal with a committee administrator.
I mean, how effective is it? I mean, do a lot of people come, or is it just kind of dependent upon you hope they're going to come?
For, you mean
for
the training?
Trainings, yeah.
Oh, I think that...
I think you have to look into that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I can't really answer that. I know that my whole staff of one made it on my... sound recommendation, put it that way. And I actually sat in on, I didn't this time, but I did some a little bit, and I watched, you know, and I did go to our orientation that we had for new members.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, you can always learn something. And I do think that both the Senate Secretary and the Chief Clerk take very seriously, because they want this process to move really smoothly, too. And they know that that's going to help. And it does.
Well, thanks, everyone.
Could you just remind us what we might expect, or what might be expected of us at the next meeting?
At the full commission?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the full commission meeting is scheduled for November 7th.
Mm-hmm.
I would anticipate that it will be a full-day meeting, but we haven't talked to the co-chair yet.
I'm sure it's going to be full-day.
I would imagine that we will have reports from the individual committees about the discussions that they have this month, kind of what direction we're going, and then I would imagine it's probably a discussion about the whole direction of the commission and whether... we're heading in the right direction, or if we need to change tracks, or
because remember we had that discussion that we would have the committee meetings first and then decide
whether to stick with that or form new committees or great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have you had a lot more people call and ask to take part in this?
Since the commission members were made public, I think that various offices have had inquiries about whether they could, if public people could become members of the commission. We've also had a number of public inquiries as to who the public members of this commission are. And we direct them to the Speaker and the President's office. I think there are a lot of people out there watching what's happening with the committees and the commission. I mean, my email list right now, without trying, is 350 people.
Wow.
And then I have to add on 100 members and so on and so forth. So, I mean, there are a lot of people. And then we're still working on the website, but we hope that that will be up and running hopefully by mid-October. But there's a lot of interest in that. And I think there are going to be a lot of people following what's going on here, not necessarily participating hands-on, but...
Well, is there an opportunity? Did I hear this at the first full commission meeting? Was there an opportunity for additional members to our subcommittees? Or was that just to attend?
Yeah, it came like Judge Lindsay was here.
Yeah.
So you can go to any meeting you want to go to.
Oh, just within the commission membership.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I also think that the co-chair is intended for subcommittees of these committees to be formed, or work groups, or whatever. So if you decide, I'm going to cut off the ethics issue and have a work group hash out some of the details, that maybe you could rely on other sources to do that. But again, it's up to the chairs of the committees and the commission co-chairs. And
well, it sounds like there is another group working on the whole
organization.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Carrie, you may want to ask your members here today, do they think this structure is going to work? That's something we're going to discuss with the full committee, or do you have recommendations on a change, or want to see it work in a different way, or...
Well, I really think that the large, that the overall group is much too large to do much of anything except listen to speeches.
Yes.
And I think that. Even this, I mean, a committee of this size is about the maximum, I think, mm-hmm. for agreeing on any kind of thing or even hashing out an issue. So I think the committee thing is the only way to go.
I do too.
Whether that gets translated later on as something useful, we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to wait and hear from everybody at the mm-hmm. meeting. I anticipate it'll be different committees. I mean, I think there'll be, I mean, we're going to focus on a few, you know, there might be an annual session committee. Just that's their sole thing, is to study and research this annual session, Oregon being one of only six states in the country that doesn't do it, you know, mm-hmm. and look at that. And then that's what I would anticipate. But why don't I give everyone until the end of the week? If you have any thoughts or ideas, email me, and then early next week, Marjorie and I will circulate a summary. All right?
Thank you very much.
Sure. You need to adjourn.
And are you online?
Well, the